in a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh, my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence. Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Moe.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome back into the podcast. This is one of my favorite episodes every year, Mitch. You saw it on the title. When you clicked on the episode, episode 138, you knew what was coming, Mitch. What do the people got in store today?
The Megasode.
That is right. It is that time of year. Our NFL season preview is on hand. The Megasode. Team by team, record predictions for all 32 NFL teams, Super Bowl picks. Everything in depth about every single team in the NFL. We do it every year. So excited to do it again here for you guys in 2022 and give some hot takes. I mean, it's the season, right? We're a week and a half away from the opening of the NFL season. And this is the time for us to plant our flags and be bullish and be bold and be dumb. And we'll see where it takes us.
It's not only the beginning of football season. It's spicy season. It's spicy season.
Yeah.
Pumpkin spice is going to become a thing here very, very shortly. It's spicy season because we have spicy takes that we're clearly going to fall on our face on in about October, November. So it is to my favorite episode we do every year. We always have a good time when we do this episode. It is fantastic. I can't wait to get into it. I don't want to waste more time. We got to do it.
Have a glass of milk on hand because, you know, you're going to need it from all the heat that you're going to be experiencing in the podcast.
That's right.
All right. Well, that's like basically what we got in the pod today. But before we get into that, we have a couple news items that we would like to hit. And though it is a shorter news segment, Mitch, we still need the introduction.
That's right. Let's get into the news and notes around the world of sports. Let's get into the news. See, it's a shorter news segment, so I had to shorten up the
Wow.
deal.
Succinct.
Yeah.
Staccato. Incredible.
Good word.
Thanks, man.
Good word. Before you go, by the way, I need to get something off my chest.
Okay.
The Corn Kid is stuck in my head and I can't get it out.
Oh my gosh. Amazing.
It's corn.
When are we getting the TikTok, Mitch? That's what the people need to know. When are we getting the Mitch Dodd corn TikTok on the Sports Hour, guys? We need it. There's a lot of options for you out there. The people want a Mitch corn TikTok.
Well, we'll get into this. We'll get into the players in a very short period of time, but I have really good Justin Fields vibes right now. So maybe a little Justin Fields, it's corn TikTok.
It's got the juice.
He's got the juice,
I've
baby.
I've never seen a more beautiful thing. I mean, I don't know. I could, after that preseason
I can tell you all about it.
Oh, man. I love it. Yeah, the Corn Kid is great. I love stuff like that on the internet where, like, you have this wholesome moment with a kid and, like, everyone just embrace it. It's not like making fun of the kid. It's just enjoying this kid's pure enjoyment of such a simple thing like corn. It's so funny. It's genuine. Like, I love stuff like this.
It's like the apparently kid that was on the news or whatever. He's like, apparently. Yes. It's like that. You're just like, ah, that's cute. You can't make fun of it.
It's awesome. It's great. We love corn. We love the Corn Kid. What's your favorite form of corn? Like your favorite way to consume corn?
Man. You know, I do like a good elote.
Oh, yes. See, that's what I was going with, you know, because elote is corn elevated.
Not like on the cob, though. Like, it's like a salad almost. It's
you white so people did, but it's fine. Whether it's on the cob, it is amazing.
I like it on the cob too, but like, you know, when I get this, I white people did, but
okay, you just want it a little less messy. You don't want to hold it, you know. You want it in your little bowl. It's fine.
Schmutz all over the place, you know. That's part of the experience. Yeah, you're
exactly.
Right.
When
yeah.
you bought it from the Elotero, literally standing on the street corner, you know what I mean? You got it all over your face, the crema, the, you know, it's like, yes, that's what you want. Elote is fantastic. For those who haven't tried it, go find yourself a local Elotero somewhere. Mitch, but news. That was not the news, though the Cord Kid is great. We do have a couple news items. We want to start in Major League Baseball with some interesting news around the Los Angeles Angels, who are reportedly going to be sold by the current ownership group. This was announced maybe a couple weeks ago at this point. And you know, I think this is significant because the Angels are one of these organizations that for the last 20 years of this ownership group have had a lot of talent at times, and particularly now. I mean, Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani are two of the best in the league, and they have just consistently underperformed for whatever reason. And listen, players go, coaches go, right? All of that can pass over a 20-year span, but if you haven't had any success in those 20 years and there's one constant and it's the ownership, well, then it's probably the ownership that's the issue, right? And so as the Angels potentially find new ownership, I think it's exciting for Angels fans because it is the potential for a more competent organization, which with just the talent that they have already bodes well for their future. I do want to add something to this, Mitch, which is that in the wake of this news, days before this news, here in Utah, we had some news that Ryan Smith, who is the current owner of the Utah Jazz, bought the Jazz a few years ago, is also the owner of RSL, the Real Salt Lake soccer team, had sold off part of his shares for the Jazz to an ownership group whose whole function and purpose is to add expansion teams to new markets in the sports world. That's their whole aim. That's their whole goal. They've helped NHL teams and MLS teams be acquired by cities who have looked for expansion opportunities. Well, this ownership group is now a part of the Utah Jazz ownership group, and it was reported that the goal in bringing them here was to bring a third professional sports franchise to Salt Lake City. That is the extent in the goal of bringing this group in, to bring another team to Salt Lake City. And then 2 days later, the Los Angeles Angels come for sale. The Los Angeles Angels AAA affiliate is the Salt Lake Bees and has been for years. There's already a relationship and a fan base there. And it just, I thought the timing was very curious. And obviously people in Salt Lake got excited. I think it is an exciting proposition for people here that we'd have another professional franchise. There's no saying whether a new ownership would move them or whether Ryan Smith specifically in this ownership group is interested in the Angels. But I do think that that is something to maybe consider here, is that not only with this new ownership group, is this a new direction for the Angels, but I think there is a potential for relocation and expansion. If the Oakland thing falls through with Vegas, you know, would the MLB rather have the Los Angeles Angels or Las Vegas Angels? You know, like, would that be more beneficial for them in the future? I don't know. I think that there could be some interesting moves here. So I don't know if you had any thoughts on one, what it would mean for the Angels just to have a different ownership group and maybe the potential of a relocation.
Relocation to me seems unlikely at this point. I think that, look, the Angels are, they're not, and don't hear what I'm not saying when I say this. The Angels are Los Angeles because it's in the name, right? The City of Angels has a team named the Angels, right? I don't think that relocation is likely, but it's probable. I would have a hunch that it would likely be the A's to be the team to move out of California first. For and sure. I don't see the Angels moving anytime soon. I love the city of Salt Lake. You know, every time I come to visit you guys, I just absolutely adore the city. I think it's fantastic. Love to visit it. And it's definitely a city worth having another professional sports team. And if they're going to have this much buzz around it, why not explore that opportunity in Salt Lake? I do want to point out Artie Moreno, the current owner of the Los Angeles Angels, bought the team for $180 million in 2003. It's now valued at $2.2
billion.
Yeah. So he's definitely making his money on this investment for sure. And when you bring up the quality of baseball, you're 100% right. The Angels have had very scarce playoff appearances over his tenure there, the last 20 years that since Artie Moreno bought the team. Had some fantastic talent, such as, you know, Mike Trout, and we've seen guys like Albert Pujols go there and struggle in the back half of his career. Josh Hamilton was a disaster, and now they have not only Mike Trout still there, but this phenom of Shohei Ohtani, and it feels like that his talents are just going to waste. Pardon me, in an organization right now that hasn't been successful for a long time. So, I think the sale is coming at the right time. I don't know if relocation is really what's going to be, and it is not an imminent thing at this point. I think I find it unlikely, but probable.
Yeah, I guess it ultimately depends on who the new owner is, right? And I do think that, I mean, there are five Major League Baseball teams in the state of California, right? Two in the Bay, two in LA, and one in San Diego. And we have two football teams in LA now. We have two basketball teams. I think all those are successful. If there's anywhere we could cut back on an LA team, it would be baseball, and it would certainly be the Angels. So outside of just Salt Lake City, you know, I know Portland is one of those other cities that's been mentioned. If a new ownership group comes in and says, you know what, we find it more about a Portland-based ownership group says we have the best offer, we want to move them up here, have our own identity. You know, I do think there's a history with the Angels. Sure. I get all that, but I do think that there is potential there because, again, it's ultimately just going to come down to a new ownership group and having a plan that not only that fits with Major League Baseball. And that's why I point at some of those specific markets, Vegas, Salt Lake, Portland, because those are markets that baseball has shown some level of interest in potential expansion. So, interesting to monitor. We'll see. You know, these sales can take quite a while, as we've seen with the Denver Broncos sale that's been ongoing here for a couple of months. So certainly something to monitor here. The other bit of MLB news that we wanted to mention is a bit of scheduling. In the 2023 season, for the first time in Major League Baseball's history, all 30 MLB teams will face each other throughout the year. This is a new configuration, an expanded interleague play between the AL and NL, and ultimately allows for all 29 other teams to visit everybody's ballpark. And when you have 162 games on the schedule, Mitch, I don't know why this wasn't a thing like until 2023, right? You have 162 games to play. You got the time to fit everybody in. It's not like there's 16, 17 games on a football schedule, right? You can't schedule everybody. There's not enough games for it. Baseball, there are plenty of games. Amazing that it took till 2023 to do this, but I love this. Why would you not incorporate this into the sport and allow for fan bases of all teams to witness their team play everywhere? Whether you are a Dodgers fan in Boston or a Yankees fan in Florida, like, it doesn't matter where you are, you'd be able to catch your team play your local team. And I love this. I think this is great.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to know that, like, the A's aren't going to play the Mariners 22 times next year. You know, like, it's nice to know that they're going to play the Marlins. They're going to play. I mean, they've always played the Giants, but, you know, they're going to play the Mets. They're going to play these bigger NL teams that we don't get to see them play every year. And I think it's a real test too, that, you know, we're going to see how every team stacks up against each other, you know. We're going to have just a hell of a fun time watching every team match up against each other, get to see matchups that we haven't seen for a long time and matchups that we don't get to see every year. So a great idea to have all 30 MLB teams play each other. I Major League Baseball didn't go wrong here. They go wrong a lot. Don't get me wrong. Rob Manfred, lifetime sentence in the pit of misery, but he didn't go wrong here with this one. This is definitely a good decision here.
Yeah, this is great. The details on this. So this is how it'll play out for each team in 2023. They'll play 52 games against division opponents, which is a decrease from 76, which is the current structure. So that's a significant decrease. And this is the interdivision game. So as you know, you mentioned, Mariners playing the A's, 40 times a year, it seems like that is going to be reduced by about 24 games. Intra-league games, so within your NL, that you're going to play 64 games. That's a decrease from 66, so essentially about the same. But the interleague is what's going to go up dramatically. So from 20 currently to 46 in 2023, so an increase of 23 interleague games, and that's where we're going to see more matchups there. So I think it's a great idea. Again, it's one of those, like, it made so much sense when I heard it that I was like, why haven't we been doing this already? But I am excited to see this next year.
Yes, absolutely.
Mitch, the last bit of news in the world of NASCAR, we had Daytona last weekend in the final race for the playoffs. A bit of drama. We chatted about it this week. I went and watched the highlights. You mentioned on YouTube the highlight video for the NASCAR races. I watched the Daytona one this week because I needed to see how it all played out. Crazy weekend, but the playoffs are set. We know where we're at after what was an eventful Daytona.
Yeah. Look, let's just start with the obvious of this one. Total wreck fest. 37 cars started the race. 16 finished running the race, and I would say probably about four of them didn't have any significant damage on them. Total wreck fest. This was a rain delayed race. It was supposed to run Saturday night, started early Sunday morning, 7 a.m. Pacific time. You bet your ass I was up ready to watch that one. They ran the first 125 laps or so without any problems. And then the rain came again, caused a little over almost a 3.5 hour rain delay. In a situation like this, NASCAR is not going to just call the race official, even though they are past the halfway point. They want to make sure they can, if they can get the whole race in, they're going to get the whole race in, because so many things were still left to happen. Austin Dillon winds up getting the win, gets in to a playoff spot, the 15th different winner this year. Sneaks in. Ryan Blaney gets in on points. Definitely not a guy I would have thought that would not have a win at this point in the year. And Martin Truex Jr., another guy I wouldn't think wouldn't have a win this year, misses out by 3 points, and he lost those in the closing laps as his damaged car just could not continue to hold off more healthy charging cars. Total wreck fest. There was a rain controversy right before the rain delay. Of drivers were saying there was rain in turn one before the caution was even thrown. Really, when you go back and look at the replay, they get into turn one right before that wreck, before the rain delay, and it is just starting to rain, and just enough rain that it caused a 13 car melee in turn one. Heartbreaking for Martin Truex, but an incredible points battle to get into this playoffs. And I think this is why the playoffs are still interesting. I don't think it's a perfect system, but it definitely continues to impress as far as win and get in. And if you stay consistent enough and there's not enough winners there at the end of the day, you'll still get in. And that was the case for Ryan Blaney. So a fantastic race in Daytona. Round of 16. Starts this weekend in Darlington, the Lady in Black. We're going to have another throwback weekend there at Darlington, some throwback schemes coming out. So it'll be a good time in Darlington. One of NASCAR's oldest tracks, been around since 1950, and it's going to be a good time in the Deep South.
Yeah, certainly race quality, not the way that NASCAR would have liked to end the season, but with the drama of the points and things up for grabs. I mean, if you're NASCAR, yeah, you are grateful. This is what you'd hope, right? That building anticipation before the playoff, building excitement before this playoff race, having a few spots up for grabs, right? And ultimately, I think that's good for NASCAR.
race quality, you just brought up a great point, and I remember that we talked about this the other night. I likened it to a basketball game where both teams are in double bonus.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really physical race. Wrecks are exciting. Like, don't get me wrong, wrecks are exciting. They get people on their feet, but that's not what you look for in good racing. And so while the end product was fun to watch, the quality of the racing wasn't really up to par. It was guys, and to their credit, I don't want to go unheard. They had to race this way. They had to race with a sense of urgency with the impending weather threat. So like, they knew the rain was coming at some point, and they had to make sure that they were up front or as close to the front as they could possibly get before the rain came, because they may not finish this thing if it gets to the halfway point. So they had to race super aggressive. But you know, you're right. The race quality definitely wasn't there. But a fantastic finish, nonetheless.
Alrighty. There you go. And that will do it for the news here. Again, a short news segment because we want to leave plenty of time for the season preview of the NFL. Mitch, so let's jump into this season preview. So for those have not been listening to the podcast before, Mitch and I use a website, a beautiful website, a perfect website called playoffpredictors.com. Shout out always to the people at Playoff Predictors. They have a website set up where you can pick game by game, every game for the entire 2022-2023 season. It's what we use to come up with these predictions. So we're not just coming up with a win total or a record off the top of our dome. We're actually picking all 17 games and wins and losses for every team. And it comes out to this prediction. And we love this method because you may think in your head, you know, the Colts, they're a 12-win team. I know it. You know, they're a 12-win team. But then go in and look at their schedule, see who they play, and you pick the games out and see if it matches, because oftentimes you get surprised by how much easier or much more difficult a schedule can be, and it changes your perception on that team. And so that's what we've done. We have our own separate predictions. We don't know our record predictions yet. We'll find that out as we go. We'll go AFC division by division, NFC division by division, and then we will give you conference championship predictions and Super Bowl predictions as well at the end. So you'll want to look forward to that, Mitch. But let us begin in the AFC, and let's start in the AFC North, Mitch. Last year, in a surprise, the Cincinnati Bengals won this division with a record of 10-7. The Pittsburgh Steelers made the playoffs at 9-7-1. The Cleveland Browns missed the playoffs at 8-9. The Baltimore Ravens also missed the playoffs at 8-9. So this was a division we saw very highly last year, had a lot of expectations for, but with the injuries to Cleveland and Baltimore, kind of fell off. And obviously no one really saw Cincinnati doing what they did. But Mitch, I guess let's start with you, and let's start with the Bengals. Did you have the Bengals repeating as AFC North champs?
I did have them repeating.
Okay.
Had them going in a tie. I had them at 11-6. Look, this offense is still just so good. They addressed the issues that they had on the offensive line. They've retained every other bit of the skill position pieces that they have, and that defense is, for the most part, still intact. So I don't see any reason why the Cincinnati Bengals couldn't win 11 games here, couldn't win the division. Now, this is going to come down to tiebreakers, right? Because I do have another team closely behind them with the same record. But the Cincinnati Bengals, this team is going to be a team that's not going to come. They're not going to be a contender really for a one seed or a two seed. But I could see them in that 3-6 range, that 3-5 range. Where this could be a serious contender and I think not the clear AFC North champion, but definitely one we need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I'm glad we're starting here, Mitch, and I'm glad we're starting with the AFC, because one takeaway that I had from this exercise is that there are like 9 or 10 teams that should be playoff teams in theory, could be playoff teams in theory, and there's only 7 spots for them. So how that all shakes out, tiebreakers, all of that's going to be very important, not only within division races, as we talked about some of these divisions, but also just for those wild card spots. And I think I'm in a similar spot with you on the Bengals. I had them going 10-7, same record as they had last year. You had them at 11-6, but I do have the Bengals missing the playoffs. And this is a tough one. This is a tough one. I love Joe Burrow. I love the Tiger King, Joe Exotic himself. Listen, I see it. I know it. But they had one of the easiest schedules in the NFL last year, and they're going from one of the easiest to one of the most difficult in 2022. And I think that there's a lot of teams in that division, in this conference, that are going to go 10-7, 11-6, be right around that range. In this case, I had them finishing as the same record as some of those wildcard teams, but missing out on tiebreakers. So 10-7, but missing out on the playoffs. I just think the Bengals, it's just a harder road this time around. And you are no longer the underdog, you're the favorite. And I think that matters. I think that makes a difference this year. It's not like they're going to be bad because of it. Again, 10 wins, 11 wins, like, but I just don't think it goes as smoothly as maybe it did towards the end of last season.
Okay. I mean, fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, like you said.
It was tough.
The schedule change is definitely something that you need to keep in mind. That's true. They also still don't have a backup quarterback, which I find wild.
So, no backup.
No, oh, Joe's the guy.
Interesting.
So, but 4 running backs, which is, and one of them's on IR. So I don't.
Well, can one of them play quarterback?
I have no idea. Samaje, get in there.
Oh man, Mitch, the team that I did have winning the AFC North. The team that I did have winning the AFC North was the Baltimore Ravens. I'm high on the Ravens this year. I think this is a bounce back year for Baltimore, who went 8-9 last year, in large part simply due to injuries. They could not stay healthy anywhere. Offense, defense, even Lamar Jackson played in just 12 games. So I think this is a bounce back for the Baltimore Ravens in general. Their schedule is going to be easier because, again, as we talk about schedules, they were last place in the AFC North. They were 8-9, but they were last place. So they are playing a last place schedule against other last place teams. But the Baltimore Ravens are certainly not a last place type team and a last place type roster. So I have Baltimore going 13-4 and ending as the third seed in the AFC North. Or sorry, third seed in the AFC.
Wow, that's wild. 13's a little rich for me, but I get your hype. You know, again, another schedule change. They're going to play an easier schedule than what they did last year. For me, that's the team I had tying with the Cincinnati Bengals at 11-6. Like I said, it's a toss up really in that division for me. Who gets that? It's going to come down to tiebreakers, head to head, stuff like that. I like Lamar Jackson. I like J.K. Dobbins. But, man, outside of Mark Andrews, I'm not impressed at all with the wide receiver core. And it worries me that Lamar is not going to have a whole heck of a lot to throw to. We've had plenty of debates on here about Lamar's ability. We all know what kind of talent he is running the football. But I have always been a big critic of his ability to throw the football. Who is he going to throw to outside of Mark Andrews? Rashad Bateman? Devin Duvernay, James Prosh, DeMarcus Robinson. Like, we don't know if any of those guys are going to emerge as a true weapon that he can have at his disposal. And Mark Andrews alone he's great, but he's not a guy that you can lean on for, you know, 10 to 12 targets a game.
I think you can. I mean, history has shown us. So you look at the numbers from last year. I mean, that's what Mark Andrews has been in this offense. And I, like, listen, the passing options didn't get better for Lamar Jackson after trading away Marquise Brown and not addressing it in the draft in any significant way. But I just don't think it matters because they are going to lean so far into the run game that the passing game is not going to, like, the wide receiver options aren't going to matter. They're going to be in 12 personnel, 13 personnel. I mean, they'll just... It won't be as much of a factor because this team is going to lean even farther into the run game and farther into heavy sets. And I think that's going to help Lamar simplify things in the pass game in a way, but also unlock more in the run game with J.K. Dobbins healthy. I think that's the direction it goes, and that's why I feel confident, even though the wide receiver group is not good.
See, but there's a danger to that. There's a serious danger to that of getting one-dimensional, and that's my worry, is that they're going to lean so far into the run game that, sure, the pass game might, you know, simplify it, maybe short underneath stuff, let Lamar be successful. But if you get too one-dimensional and you get too predictable, that's gonna hurt you. The game film is going to be really easy to break down and going to be way easier for a team to formulate a way to stop you. So I get the idea behind it. I worry about getting too one-dimensional with the Baltimore Ravens offensively. Defensively, they'll be fine. They'll be fine. They have a very talented defense, but offensively, it just screams one dimension for me. And I hope they don't. I want this team to be successful, but man, it's going to be tough to try to find that balance, I think, for them early on. And I think that's where they'll lose a lot of their games.
I think they'll lose a lot of early games.
I just think that they're going to lose a lot of early games and they'll figure something out, but you also run that risk of, well, it's been working for 5 weeks. Let's keep doing it for 6, 7, 8 weeks. And then all of a sudden you find yourself in a hole.
Yeah, I guess I see it ultimately as something that would only become a detriment really in like playoff times. And maybe we'll see that in some of my predictions later, well, but like becoming more one dimensional, right? That's where in the playoffs that matters, right? Having balance, having answers is how you move in the playoffs. So I think it'll translate to regular season success. Leaning into the run game, if they're dominant in the run game, they'll have regular season success. Beyond that, maybe not so much.
Lamar may have the heaviest workload of any quarterback in the NFL this year, as far as running the football and throwing the football, if that's the route they're going to go.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think they'll use him in the run game. Obviously, you should Lamar Jackson, but I think they're going to lean into a lot of these backs they have, and we'll see how it goes. But those are the two. So do you have any other teams in this division as playoff-ish contenders, I guess? Because you had those two teams, the Bengals and the Ravens, in the playoffs, correct? What seeds did you have them as?
I had Cincinnati as the 3 and Baltimore as the 5.
Okay, perfect. So Pittsburgh, Cleveland, where did you land on those? Pick one to start with.
We'll start with Cleveland. Let's just start with Cleveland. I think they get 3rd in the division. I think that they stay afloat long enough to not totally tank and wind up, you know, 4-13 or something like that. I got them around the 7-10, 6-11 range. I actually went with 7-10. That's where I had them. But they're a team, man, that just, it seems like nothing goes right in Cleveland. Nothing's ever right. And, it's going to be tough, I think, for Cleveland without Deshaun Watson there for a long time, with the quarterback change, with all the stuff this team has gone through over the last couple of months, the criticism of even just the Deshaun Watson signing, that I don't think they really find their stride with you know, anyone that they have under center until Deshaun Watson gets back. It's going to be really tough for them. Love Nick Chubb, really like the defense, top 10 defense, but you know, yeah, just feels icky.
It's just hard to predict what this team is going to be with all that talent and Jacoby Brissett under center, right? Like, how good could that be? I mean, we just don't really know, right? I mean, we know when the offensive line is healthy and the running backs are healthy, this is one of the best run games in the league, and they can certainly lean on that. But leaning on that for 11 games is a tall task. Leaning on that for 4 or 6, you know, you can get by and get back to, like, you know, but what can Jacoby Brissett do with this offense, and how much can you, you know, hope that the defense carries you? I don't know. So I had them in the 11 games that Deshaun was gone. I had them going 3-8. And then I had them finishing the season at 7-10. So I was right there with you. And I, like, 8-9, 7-10. Like, I think that's possible. I just don't know how much they can get past that, because ultimately it's going to come down to what they look like without Jacoby Brissett. Now, best case scenario is Jacoby Brissett goes like 5-4, or what would it be, 6-5 over 11 games. That's like, if you're 5-6, 6-5 when Deshaun Watson comes back, I think you're going to feel really good, because the way their schedule plays out, there's winnable games down the stretch with Deshaun, and you could maybe then be in that playoff conversation. But again, it's just hard to predict with what it's going to look like with Jacoby Brissett. Besides Deshaun Watson and the quarterback, there are new pieces, pass catchers, Amari Cooper, like health there. What does that whole unit look like? I mean, I still think there's some questions around the team. So just kind of a hard one, but I felt good with 7-10. That felt pretty on point. So
yeah, definitely.
Mitch, the Steelers at the bottom of this division, they'll be starting your former favorite guy, Mitchell Trubisky. He's starting week one.
He kisses titties, so I like him.
He does. Mitch, they went 9-7-1 last year. They're not going to be a playoff team this year, as we both projected. What did you end up with as far as their record?
I mean, if you've watched any preseason football, this offensive line is bad.
Yeah.
And whoever's under center is in trouble. Najee Harris is in trouble. They need to figure that out. And I don't trust right now where they're at that they're going to figure any of that out. They're going to win some games defensively. They're going to win some games on the defensive side of the ball. I trust any defense that Pittsburgh or Mike Tomlin in particular puts out there. But the offense is such a mess right now, especially in the front five, that I have a hard time putting this team anywhere near 500. I think I was gracious at 6-11. I think I was gracious at 6-11. Look, time's going to tell. Maybe it was just a bad night for the offensive line, and that's the look that they got. But it was 3 weeks of bad offensive line play.
Yeah, I mean, the O-line's been bad for years.
It's been bad for a few years. You know? It hasn't been great. We saw it when Steelers went 11-0 to start a year, and the offensive line completely fell apart there in the last 6 weeks of the season. It was just not good.
Yeah.
So, it feels weird to put the Pittsburgh Steelers this far under 500, but man, I just don't have a whole lot of confidence. Like I said, I think I was being gracious at 6-11.
Yeah, it's certainly a reset year, if anything, for Pittsburgh to, you know, see what they have with Trubisky, but ideally get Pickett out there for whatever, some portion of the season, whatever you're comfortable with, 6 games, 8 games, whatever it is, and have an idea of what he looks like as far as a franchise quarterback moving forward, and then building upon that with some of the talent they already have. I had them going 5-12. It's hard. I mean, their division is better, and the AFC is going to be competitive. It's going to be a tough spot for them. Pittsburgh Steelers. If anybody could do it though, it's Mike Tomlin, right? If anybody could take this team and win 10 games though, it'd be Mike Tomlin, right?
Of course, he's probably behind Bill Belichick, the best coach in the NFL right now.
Yeah,
in my mind,
no doubt. Alrighty, Mitch, that'll do it for the AFC North. Let's jump over to the AFC East. Last year, the Buffalo Bills repeated as AFC East champions with a record of 11-6. Mitch, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that we both had the Buffalo Bills repeating as conference, as division champs here. Yes.
Pretty fair assumption. Yeah. I would say.
What was the record and seed that you had for Buffalo?
1 seed, 14-3 is what I got.
Okay.
I
had them as the 1 seed as well. 13-4 right there.
So we're right there with each other. Look, I don't know if there's a team that can go 17-0, I think this year it's the Buffalo Bills. I'm not saying that there's going to be one, but if there is one, I have the best feeling about the Buffalo Bills. This is the most complete, well-balanced, well-rounded, good defense. We all know how awesome the offense is. This is a team that has that sort of potential. Josh Allen is one of my guys this year to be an MVP candidate at the end of the year. I think he is primed to make a very strong case for that. the only question mark, and I think from what we've seen from Devin Singletary in the preseason and what we've heard about him in camp this summer, is that he's looking a heck of a lot better. Things are going a heck of a lot better. The run game was a huge question mark for the Buffalo Bills. I'm trusting that that's been addressed. Sean McDermott has found a way to adjust and fix the weaknesses ever since he came into Buffalo. Buffalo is going to be the best team in the NFL by the end of the year.
Yeah. You know, I would be on board with you on the undefeated thing if they didn't start the season off in LA against the defending Super Bowl champ Los Angeles Rams. So they might start the season off 0-1. They might go 16-1 after that, but 17-0
might
be
tough. That's a good point, because I do have them losing to L.A., so yeah, like that's one of their losses.
It starts off very tough there with that matchup, but it'll get easier. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, I have a 13-4, you know, 14-3, number one seed in the AFC. I do think that they have the clearest path to the number one seed in the AFC because of how competitive the AFC West is, and we'll get to that division later with the Chiefs and others. And then, I mean, I had Baltimore at 13-4, same record, but not me, you know, having that top seed. I think maybe a team from the AFC North emerging potentially, but Buffalo has the keys to retain the number one seed. And I think that's going to be vital this year. You look back at what happened last season, and I mean, we could look at that Buffalo Kansas City playoff game and sum it up as simply who had the last possession wins. Like, we can do that, but having that game in Arrowhead makes a difference, right? Having that game in Arrowhead makes a difference. So if Buffalo can secure home field advantage throughout the AFC playoffs, that is going to be a huge advantage for them. And when that matchup with Patrick Mahomes or Joe Burrow or Justin Herbert or Lamar Jackson, whoever it is, comes down to that, you know, you're going to get that game at home and have that advantage at your side. And I think that's going to be key for Buffalo. I do think it's their year. I think it's the year of the Bills. It just feels like things are moving that direction for them. So I'm very high on them as well. Right there with you at the one seed. Did you have another playoff team from this division, Mitch?
I did not. I had a very narrow miss.
But no playoff teams.
But no other playoff teams. Okay. There is one other team that I think is very good, but I think they're going to miss out. But
okay. Well, I did have another playoff team from this division. So let's
naturally
go
yes.
there. And it's the Miami Dolphins, Mitch. Mitch is a Tua hater, and he hates the actual animal, the dolphin. He hates all dolphins everywhere. It's actually a really sick fact, but, you know.
Wish they would go extinct, yep.
Anti-dolphin and anti-left-handers. But the thing is, Mitch, that this team is going to be good. I mean, they were 9-8 last year, right? Like, we look at Tua, oh, he's a bad quarterback, or, you know, and we look at all the things that, I mean, they were 9-8 last year. They won 10 games the year before that and missed the playoffs, right? They have been good. They were good under Brian Flores, and they were just right there, but just missed out. And they added Mike McDaniel, and they added Teron Armstead, and they added Tyreek Hill. And I just don't see a scenario in which they add all of those things and it results in either the same record or a worse record, and it results in them missing the playoffs. I just think the door is going to be open there. The path is easier for them to sneak in as a wildcard team than it is for many of the teams in the AFC West, than it is for the Bengals, in my opinion. And so that's why I think Miami gets in. They finished 10-7 for me, the same record as Cincinnati, but they do get in as the seventh seed because of tiebreakers. And I just think Mike McDaniel is going to make this offense work. The defense, we saw it under Brian Flores, how consistent it was. And Brian Flores isn't there, but the personnel still is. So even with a drop-off in that regard, it's still at least an average defense. And an average defense with an above-average offense with Mike McDaniel and the weapons there, I think that's possible, and that's a 10-7 team. So that's why I had Miami getting in. We always see new teams in the playoffs and teams that miss out. This is going to be one of those. Bengals drop out, Miami moves in. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, I'm actually right there with you. I got Miami at 10-7. I do. Okay. They just miss out to another particular team we'll get to in just a little bit. First of all, let me address this. I don't hate Tua. I'm sure Tua is a wonderful guy.
He's a Bama guy. I mean, this is coming from the Bama fan. That's it.
Not
amazing.
My Bama. But
my Bama, I'm Bryce Young Bama.
Look, I'm sure he's a fantastic human being. It's more my prejudice against left-handed quarterbacks is really what it is. Look, it's the offense is going to be fine. It's going to be just fine. Okay. I don't think that Tua is terrible. I don't think that he's bad. Okay. I just don't think that he's a guy that can lead a team into the playoffs. Right now, at least, he could prove me wrong 3-4 years down the road, and he could be a perennial playoff guy. Clearly, you think he could be that guy right now. I don't think that he can be that guy right now.
So you don't think going 9-8 last year mean like
I don't think it.
10-6 they went 10-6 the year before when he started half the games, right? That was the Ryan Fitzpatrick, him back and forth. But they went 10-6 that season, and then last year with him, they go 9-8. So I'm just like.
I'm not saying that it doesn't mean anything. It does. It tells me that he can win. You can put him under center. You can win with Tua. I can't explain it, Dylan. There's just something holding me back from going all in on Tua, and it's nothing against Tua.
Put the ball in that left hand. You're just like, damn it to hell.
You tell me how successful left-handed quarterbacks have had outside of Steve Young.
It's wrong.
Kent State. You tell me how the other left-hand quarterbacks we've had. Look,
Steve Young, come on.
Talked about Tyreek Hill in our NFL superlatives. Grass isn't always greener on the other side. Yeah. Tyreek Hill, I don't think that this is a better situation for him. I know he's been hyping Tua up, and as you should. That's your quarterback. That's my quarterback. You have to hype him up, right? That's your guy now. I don't think that this is a better situation for Tyreek. The running back room, I've also addressed this, is a – It's not like they don't have a good running back. It just seems crowded. And I feel like that you have to find that guy that you can lean on for 15 carries a game. And
do you, though? Because Mike McDaniels comes from San Francisco, and they have whoever the hell they find on the street to run the ball, and it works out great.
And one of those guys is Raheem Mostert that he coached.
It certainly seems like Mike McDaniels trying to recreate that aesthetic in Miami.
I feel like I have to explain myself with Miami. There's so much I'm not saying.
You just don't like Dolphins.
No, there's so much being heard that I'm not saying. I'm not knocking Mike McDaniel. Offensive genius. I think he's going to be a great head coach. Tua, good quarterback. Don't think he's quite there yet. I think there's too much space taken up in the running back room. Tyreek Hill, not going to have a better situation in Miami than he will have in Kansas City. The defense, same personnel, even without Brian Flores there, it'll be fine. I just think they just barely miss out. I have them at 10 wins. I mean, it's not like I'm saying they're going to win 6 games. They're going to win 10 games. They're going to be just fine. They're competing for that other wild card spot. I don't understand why I'm going to get knocked here for putting Miami just outside the playoff picture. They could very easily be in the playoff picture by the end of the year. And then you're going to dance on my grave and tell me how wrong I was about the Miami Dolphins when I had them one spot outside of the playoffs. So you know what? Go ahead. Yeah, I hate Dolphins. I want them to go extinct. I support poaching of sea life.
Wow.
Just call me all the terrible things you want under the sun, but I don't have the Dolphins in the playoffs. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you.
I love you, Mitch. We had them at the same record. We had them as the same record. That's why I love this exercise.
You like to push my buttons and you push them a little too hard.
I just want to understand the Miami thing. Because again, ultimately just comes down into I'm buying some of the changes are good and you are not. And that's fair. That's what we do on a lot of these teams. There's going to be a lot of teams here. There's another team in the AFC that I'm going to be very high on that made a number of changes that a lot of people aren't as high on, but ultimately it's just buying into things like that. And I'm maybe more bought into Miami than you are, which is okay.
I'll tell you exactly what this is kind of like. This is kind of like what people have been like with the Chargers over the last few years, right? They make all the right changes, right? They bring in the right minds. They bring in the right personnel, and they haven't shown us anything. They have nothing to show for it. And people could talk about, Justin Herbert's got to grow as a quarterback, you know. But no, he's been an elite talent since like last year. He was an elite talent. The year before, in his rookie year, he showed that prospects already. I think by the end of the year, you would have considered him, you know, a top 7 quarterback in the league by the end of the year. So like, it's not that I think Miami is a poorly run organization or they're not headed in the right direction. I just haven't seen it yet. This is a team that has been underperforming or has been bad for a long time, and I'm just not going to buy into it yet. You have to show me something first.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. We'll see. We'll see this year. I mean,
I was fooled by the Chargers before. I'm not going to be fooled by the Dolphins, okay?
Those warm weather teams, they just get you. They just lull you in with beaches and sunshine.
They can't play in December. What can I say?
Mitch, the New England Patriots were a playoff team from this division last year, right? They finished 10-7 with a rookie Mac Jones and in what was a very surprising season, I think, for many when we looked at New England. I don't see that same level of success. In fact, I see a big regression. I had them finishing last in this division at 6-11.
Mm-hmm.
Going from 10-7 to 6-11. And it's surprising to look at, but I think Mac Jones was propped up a lot last year. And they used him perfectly, and he executed exactly how he needed to. Like, that's not a knock on him or his abilities or anything, but he was propped up a lot by a very good offensive line, by an overperforming run game, and an offensive coordinator in Josh McDaniels, who has a lot of experience with Hall of Fame quarterbacks and winning Super Bowls, right? Well, Josh McDaniels is gone. The offensive line isn't quite the same. You got Joe Judge and Matt Patricia, who are the offensive coordinators this year for Mac Jones.
That's
guys who have never been offensive coordinators ever, by the way. Like, not offensive coaches. And I just don't see how it goes as well. I just don't see how it goes as well for New England. They caught breaks last year that they're just not going to catch this year. And that's why I had them at 6-11.
Problems are going to start for the Patriots from the top down. And it always spells trouble when not only do you have two guys running the offense that have never been offensive coaches, but two guys trying to run the offense together. That right. seems like a clash of interests.
Miami did that last year with co-offensive coordinators, and it didn't go great. The offense was not good.
It does not spell success. You're absolutely right. Mac Jones was propped up, right? He was given a very favorable situation, and they played to what Mac Jones can do. I don't know if they can replicate that again, because now there's all the game film on Mac Jones. And what can he do? Oh, well, let's take that away and put him in uncomfortable situations. You mentioned the overperforming run game. I don't understand why people are so hyped over Ramondre Stevenson and Damian Harris. Like, I think they're third down backs at, you know, RB2s on a depth chart at best. I don't think that they're starting caliber at all. And we know that the Patriots never address the wide receiver core. They didn't do it with Tom Brady. Why the hell would they do it with Mac Jones? Then there's the variable of Bill Belichick and his greatness, the greatest coach that we've ever seen. I see a scenario where the Patriots are more wins in the column than losses. I don't think that's going to happen. And I have them at 6-11 as well, tied for last in the division, 1-5 within the division. And my first hot take, Bill Belichick is 70 years old, right? He's got a hot young girlfriend. He's got family in the staff, right? I forget what his kid's name is.
Steve
Belichick. Yeah. The guy that makes the weird faces.
He's got the mullet.
Yeah. Awesome looking dude. Look, he's got family in that staff ready to carry on that name. He's 70 years old. He's been around since the 70s. I think that this is Bill Belichick's last year.
He's out.
He's never had a great relationship with Robert Kraft. Things have changed drastically over the last 2.5 years in New England. When Tom left, it seemed to start the downhill, the slide for the New England Patriots. I think Bill's done after this year. And unfortunately, the greatest coach of all time walks out on the 6-11 record.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. If they do end the season at 6-11, I think it would probably be a good time to, maybe it's time to really just clean house and start anew everywhere on the coaching staff and in that front office. It certainly could be different times if the Patriots have a season that we'd expect. But I'm right there with you. I just think it's tough. As far as the Jets go, Mitch, they finished last season at 4-13. You said you had them at 6-11, tied for last in the division. I had them at 7-10. So just ahead of New England.
We're right there. Yeah.
I say 7-10, Mitch, and that was the number that I had in mind. That's where it ended up at, because I think anything less than 7-10 is a major disappointment. Wow. I think if you're the Jets, then you realistically you're trying to be at 8 or 9 wins, right? That should be their goal in their head. But I think anything less than 7 wins is we didn't make a big enough step in the right direction. And that's going to fall on somebody, whether it's Robert Saleh, whether it's Zach Wilson, whether it's the defense, like whatever, somebody is going to pay for that disappointment. I do think there's potential for more. It ultimately just comes down to a young defense, which I think is going to be surprisingly good. But are they surprisingly good, aka top 15? Or are they surprisingly good, aka top 10? Right? If they could get to that level, obviously you see some more wins. And then ultimately, that second year quarterback in Zach Wilson, what does he look like? Can he stay healthy for a full season? Can you see what you need from him as far as progress, growing towards that franchise quarterback, control of the offense, limiting the mistakes that he had last season? If you see all those things, then we're probably seeing more than 7 wins, but 7 was like that number that sort of hedging the bets there in between. And I think at least at minimum, they need to see at least 7 wins.
Yeah. When you're looking at this depth chart, there's not a whole hell of a ton to hate. Like on paper, it looks really good.
It's a balanced team, and deep in the sense, not like there's a ton of talent deep, but deep in that they just have solid players throughout the roster now.
Can I just name you the defense? Because you mentioned I have the Jets at 6-11.
Right.
I think that they're going to win. And I think that they could win more than 6 games, to be honest with you. I think that they could. I think they're going to win a lot of games on the defensive end. Let me just name some names on this defense for you. Carl Lawson, pretty decent. Solomon Thomas, pretty decent. Quinnen Williams, former top 10 pick. John Franklin Myers, good depth guy. Like him. Quan Alexander has had some standout years in Tampa Bay. CJ Mosley seems to be around as one of the top linebackers in the league year in, year out. Quincy Williams. Sauce Gardner, my guy, Sauce. Jordan Whitehead, LaMarcus Joyner, DJ Reed. That's the starting line. That's the starting defense. I really, really like this defense. I think that offensively, you're going to have to introduce Breece Hall at a very steady pace. I hope that Breece Hall gets 20 carries a game and 10 targets a game because I drafted him in fantasy, but I think you need to keep Michael Carter still a part of this offense if you want to be successful. I don't think you can just throw Breece Hall out there and have him be the bell cow for the team.
That way out of training camp that Michael Carter's still going to be the starter, that Breece Hall hasn't already taken over that main role, and that at least in the beginning of the season there will be that duality there.
Yeah, but look at his Zach Wilson's receiving options. Elijah Moore, very talented. Corey Davis, tons of speed, has not shown that he's been the top 5 pick that he was just a few years ago. And Garrett Wilson, the rookie out of Ohio State. This is a very young, talented team. What I think. Their ceiling isn't very high, but I don't think their floor is that low.
I don't think they're a 4-win team again.
No,
you know,
they'll be a 6. I think they could be. I think maybe 6 wins is maybe on the floor. 5-6 wins is the floor.
Okay. Yeah.
They could be an 8-9 win team if the cards fall right. Like you said, Zach Wilson has to stay healthy, and they have to use their weapons in an effective manner. So yeah, I don't hate the 7 wins thing. I think that they're fully capable of that.
Yeah, we'll see what kind of growth they can make here in year two with Robert Saleh and Zach Wilson. Mitch, let's jump over to the AFC South, where last season the Tennessee Titans won this division. They were the number 1 overall seed in the AFC last year at 12-5. I don't have the Titans repeating in the AFC South this year.
Me neither.
Okay.
Me neither.
Who do you have winning this division?
At the 4 seed, I have the Colts.
Okay. I also had the Colts at the 4 seed.
10-7. And I think that, look, upgrade at the quarterback position, right? Matt Ryan, great veteran quarterback to bring in. Obviously, mobility's never been his thing, but he is a true pocket passer that's still got a really good arm for his age. I think that he's going to be a very valuable asset to this offense. You have the bell cow of all bell cows coming from his Wisconsin days and now in the NFL continuing to be that 25 carry a game guy, Jonathan Taylor, NFL's leading rusher last year. I find, though, that the most intriguing part of this, and the defense is fine. The defense will be fine. I love Bobby Okereke, DeForest Buckner. Yannick Ngakoue was a great ad. But I think that, and not to mention Stephon Gilmore. I mean, how could I forget him? What I find most intriguing about the Colts this year is their wide receiver core. Is Michael Pittman going to step up and be a true number one? I think he has all the talent and capability in the world to do it. He's going to be asked to do it this year. Can he actually step up? Paris Campbell, we know the speed. The guy can be a burner. The guy can be an absolute burner. Can he actually mitigate the drops and be a true reliable number two? And then the rookie, Alec Pierce. Alec Pierce, a great pick out of the University of Cincinnati. Can he step in, excuse me again, to that number three role? I think that he's perfectly capable of doing that. It's going to be intriguing to see what Matt Ryan does with this extremely young wide receiver core. And if I'm anywhere in that Indianapolis organization, I'm telling those young wide receivers, the guy throwing the ball, you might want to listen to, because he's played a lot of football and he knows what he's talking about. And if he's got something to coach you up on, let him coach you up on it. Super young talent, but very, very promising. I got him at 10 wins, 10-7.
Okay. Yeah. So I had them as the four seed as well. I had them at 12-5. So a couple more wins. Wow. Okay. Than you. And I thought you had a great breakdown there. The biggest question mark on this team, arguably, besides just what difference does Matt Ryan make over Carson Wentz, right? Like, what does that actually quantifiably look like on the team? But that wide receiver group is the biggest question. Do you know who the highest paid wide receiver in that room is?
I'm going to go Alec Pierce.
It is Ashton Doolin.
Oh my God, are you serious?
He is making $2.1 million this year, and he is the highest paid wide receiver in the room.
It's like number four in the depth chart.
That is when your highest paid receiver is making $2 million because Michael Pittman was a second round pick, Paris Campbell was a second round pick, Alec Pierce was a second round pick. Got a lot of young receivers, and they're all cheap. But I point that out because that's a lot of expectation for a lot of young players. And obviously we saw a lot from Michael Pittman last year, and you would assume with a more accurate quarterback and Matt Ryan that you would just automatically see improvement. I do also think that we're underrating the role of the tight end in this team and what that role is going to mean for Mo'Ali Cox and Jelani Woods. One of the guys that I was pounding the table in this podcast for before the draft is this is a kid you want to pay attention to, right? It's a guy we talked about on here. Tight end two for the Colts, but he's a move tight end. He's not an inline blocker. He's more of a wide receiver type. So how often are you going to see him in the slot instead of a traditional slot wide receiver, right? How many times is it going to be 12 personnel, but you have one of those tight ends split out wide, and how much of a factor are they going to play in this passing game? I think that's an element of this wide receiver group that maybe people are overlooking as wide receivers are weak, but the tight ends are going to play a big role in this. And obviously this team is predicated on the run game, on Jonathan Taylor, on this offensive line, and controlling at the trenches on both sides of the ball on offense and defense. I just think the Colts have the easiest path to a division win and the easiest path to a good record this year because of the AFC South. They have a weak division. I had them going 5-1 in the division. And I think this is a solid team. Like, is it going to lead to playoff success? I don't know. But regular season success, I could see it. And I always am a sucker on pounding it for the Colts. I always have. They have a great roster. I love the way they construct their teams. And so I'm gonna fall for it again. I did it last year. I think I'm winning 11 games and winning the division. And it didn't happen with Wentz, but It's Matt Ryan now. Feels better this time around.
Well, and you mentioned it right there, the emphasis on the run game. Matt Ryan over in Atlanta, his best success was when they could lean some parts of the game on Devonta Freeman.
And play action pass. And yeah. Play action pass is huge. And how much more opportunity are you going to have that here with a Jonathan Taylor? I mean, come on.
And shout out Chris Ballard for building a great roster.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I just love that the whole team, the roster is solid. I love Indianapolis and what they've done. It hasn't resulted in a lot of the success they've wanted to see besides, you know, one playoff one with the Philip Rivers year. But I think this is their division to lose, Mitch. So that leaves the Tennessee Titans, who did win this division. Obviously, we had them missing the playoffs. I had them finishing second in the division, but 7-10 for the Titans this year. Where did you have them?
I had them at 8-9.
Okay. So same realm here.
It's just the miles they've put on Derrick Henry. And like Ryan Tannehill's been great. He's been good, great at times, but good. Yeah. He doesn't have a whole hell of a lot to throw to. Robert Woods is going to be his wide receiver one. It's really been the Derrick Henry show in Tennessee for the last 2-3 years. Yep. And, you know, he had the health issues last year with the foot deal, foot or ankle, whatever it was. It just doesn't spell success for me to go into a fourth consecutive season riding Derrick Henry. I expect Hassan Haskins to get a healthy workload in supplement to Derrick Henry, similar type player. But I just don't know if Ryan Tannehill can bear more workload than what he's actually been given over the last few years. Great career revival, right? We thought he was dead after Miami, and has really found a new home in Tennessee. But damn, it's really hard to put all your trust in Ryan Tannehill. And I think if things go bad, we're going to see Malik Willis at some point this year if Ryan Tannehill doesn't show up. Malik Willis had some great looks in preseason and looked really, really good. Feels bad keeping my boy Jeff Swaim out of the playoffs, but I don't think that Tennessee really can last much longer leaning solely almost on Derrick Henry.
Yeah, they just haven't gotten better. They've just clearly gotten worse, right?
Yeah.
Losing A.J. Brown and replacing him with Robert Woods and Treylon Burks is not getting better. Derrick Henry is not getting any younger. Ryan Tannehill isn't getting any younger. This offensive line is solid. The defense is solid, but I think it's a little overrated, and I think the defense is due for some regression. Last year, they were 12th in defensive DVOA, and they only allowed 20.8 points per game last year on defense, which was fifth in the NFL. But if you go to DVOA, Football Outsiders DVOA, which is a great advanced metric, if you go to their estimated wins based on their DVOA, right, they were 12-5 last year, the AFC number one seed, they were only estimated to win 8 games. So that screams to me overperformance, right? You got some breaks, you got some lucky defense, outplayed themselves, they were better than they were supposed to, and that just means regression. So I just think it's hard regression for Tennessee this year, and that's why 7-10, 8-9, that's the realm I'm thinking. I don't think they quite, maybe 9-8, maybe 9-8, but I just don't think they hit that 500 mark, and they're going to see themselves right below it. And perhaps that's a shift in a new direction completely for them, right? Could they completely move on to Malik Willis or somebody else? Do they look to shop Derrick Henry like they moved A.J. Brown like next season? I mean, it could be a very different look in Tennessee here.
The problem with Derrick Henry, though, is that he's 27, 28. We know that the shelf life of running backs is much shorter than it is any other position. So
that is a great – if anybody retains value, it's Derrick Henry. But I would be curious what an actual NFL team in 2023 would be willing to trade for a running back. You know, I don't like Derrick Henry.
He does one thing, which is run the ball. He doesn't catch the ball out of the backfield a whole hell of a lot.
No.
Like he is your Hulk that you send out there and just beat the hell out of someone. That takes a toll on a player. And a player like his, we've seen it over history plenty of times of guys like that recent history, I think of guys like Brandon Jacobs. Think of guys like Earl Campbell. That's going way back. But like guys built like that, they have this very dominant stretch, but then it all falls off the table because they do one thing, and that's just bruise the hell out of people. And that takes a toll on a player's body.
Yeah, no doubt. Mitch, Houston Texans up next. They finished 4-13 in this division last year. They were third. It's not going to be a good year for the Texans. All right. No. I mean, it's the Texans. We know where they're at. I had them going 2-15.
So
worst
did I.
Record, worst record in the NFL. It's just hard to feel any optimism about the Texans. They're clearly in a rebuild. They clearly want to hire Josh McCown, but haven't felt justified to hire him over the last couple of years. So they keep replacing him with random guys that'll fill the seat for a year. But next offseason, they'll finally be able to hire Josh McCown as their coach. And then I guess we'll see what the Texans are. But until then, it's going to be a rough season.
I love Lovie Smith, but this is just the worst situation for him to be in.
The end of the deal, man.
It's he's getting the short straw really here. I had him at 2-15 as well. It's just not a good situation. I hope Davis Mills makes that alive. I really do. I think he's got
his long neck. I hope him and his long neck survive.
Long neck quarterbacks, another thing I hate, like Mike Glennon. Like, I just hate long neck.
So a left-handed long necked quarterback is just the thing of nightmares for Mitch.
Oh God, left-handed.
Just sweating profusely in his bed thinking about it.
It keeps me up at night, man. It
Brock
really
Osweiler
does.
With the left hand is just like the
oh,
worst.
Oh God,
thing.
Don't even talk about it, dude. It's like with Mike Glennon's nose, like big nose quarterbacks too. Like just really bad.
Oh my goodness, Mitch, Jacksonville. The Swamps of Jacksonville. 3-14 last year with Trevor Lawrence, but no more Urban. He's gone. He's at the bar with his girlfriend now, living his best life. Doug Peterson's in the room, though, Mitch. An adult is in the room.
A Super Bowl winning adult.
It should be better for Jacksonville, right? 3 wins last year. I had them at 6-11 this year. That's double the wins. That feels like a big season for them. After everything they went through last year and still how raw this roster is and how raw a lot of the talent on this roster is, I think 6-11 would be a fine season for Jacksonville.
I'm going to catch a little hate for this. Had them going 8-9 tied with the Titans.
Wow.
Had him 8-9.
Wow.
And you mentioned the rawness of this lineup. But I think a huge, huge, huge factor that can never go unstated about the 2021 Jacksonville Jaguars was the presence of Urban Meyer and how much he drug that team down. The talent doesn't really super excite me. Like Trevor Lawrence, the former first round pick, guy should be fantastic because all the talent in the world. Travis Etienne. Another Clemson guy has all the talent in the world. If he stays healthy, should be an old world, dual threat back. The wide receiver core, question mark, right? Christian Kirk, Marvin Jones, Zay Jones. That's a lot of Jones. Jamal Agnew has shown from time to time to be reliable. I really think that things go right in Jacksonville with the change up top. Like I said, problems start from the top down. And with the top guy gone and a stable human being at the helm, a Super Bowl winning coach in Doug Peterson, expect a culture change, expect not accepting loss as just an imminent outcome. I think that Jacksonville is really, really set up to grow over the next few years and be a place that guys are going to want to play. I think they outperform, and I really think that they put on a great show. They're going to be one of those NBA League Pass teams. You turn on a Jacksonville game. You turn on a Jacksonville game because there's nothing else to watch, and they're going to have some exciting things happen. A little high on Jacksonville at 8-9, sure, but I think they're fully capable of doing that.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt that we're going to see improvement from Jacksonville. I think the biggest question is how much, right? What's the Urban Meyer factor? Is it three games? Is it six games? You know, where in that range are we going to see the difference? That is one of the things I'm most curious about, because clearly, I mean, I don't think they're going to have the number one pick for the third year in a row, right? I think they're going to be able to climb out of that.
As a franchise, but, you can't have the number one pick 3 years in a row.
Then you're really moving to London. Then you got to get out of there. But
Mexico City Jaguars.
Hey, I love that. It fits more than London. Shoot. But what that level of difference is, right? I think that's the biggest question, and it's certainly one of the things I'm most excited to watch this season.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mitch, last AFC division here, the AFC West, and last season the Kansas City Chiefs, AFC West champions again. With a 12-5 record, we saw three playoff teams from this division last season. And if my math is correct, we also see the same amount this year for both of us. We'll see if the teams are the same. But let's start at top with Kansas City. And I don't doubt that we both have the Chiefs making the playoffs. I will start here because I had them winning the AFC West yet again. Number two seed in the AFC and a 13-4 record for Kansas City next year. That's where I'm sitting, Mitch. Where are you at on Kansas City?
Kansas City going 12-5, five seed, finishing second in the division. I think that losing Tyreek Hill is a much more massive hit to the Kansas City offense than I think most people believe. They lost that guy that's going to stretch the field. You look at the rest of the wide receiver corps, they got Juju, they got MVS, Mecole Hardman, who has definitely not panned out. I think Sky Moore will emerge as a I'm a big Sky Moore guy, man. Let me just be upfront and honest. I'm a big Sky Moore guy. I think he'd be the number two option in this offense by the end of the year, if not the number one. I think that he will be the next big Patrick Mahomes target. I know he's going to start about fourth on the depth chart here, but I am not going to be surprised when he's playing 75-80% of the snaps per game at the end of the year. Big Sky Moore guy. The offensive line stayed relatively intact. He's still got Travis Kelce. I know he's kind of on the back end of his career, but has continued to stay a reliable target. Probably going to become more of a red zone target, not a stretch the field type tight end. Now that he's into his 30s. The Chiefs are a team that could absolutely win this division. They could absolutely finish third also. I don't think they're going to finish last, but they could absolutely finish third. And I think that is solely based on the fact of how competitive this division is, how good this division is. It's going to be super talented. I have it on the hill right now, four AFC West teams in the playoffs, which is a bold take, I know. But like the Kansas City Chiefs are going to be either winning this division or finishing third. I said split the difference, put them in second, and they're not going to have anything to be upset about with a 12-5 record because they're still going to be one of the best teams in the NFL.
Yeah, I think for the Chiefs, I mean, it's easy to look at the Tyreek Hill loss and wonder what that's going to do to the offense. And obviously it's going to have an effect. I don't think that effect is going to be seen as much in the regular season as it will come playoff time, right? When you have a chess piece like Tyreek Hill to move around the board and create mismatches wherever you want in a playoff game is extremely valuable. I think in the regular season, the combined talent that they have in the wide receiver group with MVS, with Juju, with Sky Moore, Travis Kelce, I think they'll get by fine offensively. And I think the defense is going to improve. The young players that they've not only drafted this year, but even last year, are continuing to play bigger roles. I think George Karlaftis and Leo Chenal are going to have big roles on this team on defense. And I think that that's a good thing. I think where the defense was a weakness, a strong weakness a couple years ago, now maybe it becomes more of a balanced team where the offense and defenses are both pretty solid. And the offense isn't quite top five, but they're still top 10, top 12. And maybe the defense is top 12, top 15, and that's how they have their success. So I see Kansas City as adjusting this year, right? They win one more game than they did last year, my prediction. 13-4, 12-5, but somewhere in that range I think is fair. But I still think they're the favorite in this division. The Chargers is still, much like we've talked about with Miami, prove it to me. We'll see it when you prove it with Los Angeles as far as making that leap to division champ. Denver's got a lot of new pieces, and Vegas has a lot of new pieces as well, including a head coach. So I think all that being said, Kansas City is the safest bet for me and the one I feel most confident in winning the division, though I do think any of four of these teams could be the division winner. And I would not be surprised at the end of the year, right? I think that's fair to say.
No, it definitely is a safe bet. Absolutely. I mean, why have they given you a reason not to think that? Yeah.
So who did you? Okay, so I had 13-4, 2 seed. You had 12-5, 5 seed. So who did you have winning the AFC West?
I want to put a public statement out right now before I say this team's name. If you make me look like an idiot and you go 9-8 or 8-9 again, I've already said I'm out on you. I've already said I'm out on the hype on you. Somehow you wound up at the top of this division for me. And I'm telling you right now, if you make me look like an idiot, I will hunt you down. I will find you. I will hold you captive. I will wow. Destroy you. I have the Los Angeles Chargers at 13-4. And look, I mean, it feels disgusting to put them at the 2 seed in this scenario, because you know what? I've said it multiple times here. Every time we feel like the Los Angeles Chargers are ready to break out and win the division and be a serious Super Bowl contender, Stephen A. Smith just last week had him as his Super Bowl sleeper favorite. I'm not falling for it again. I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt with this 13-4 2 seed record. Prove you make me look like an idiot, and ooh, there will be hell to pay. I'm talking lifetime pit of misery type stuff. If the Chargers make me look dumb, I'm gonna write. I might quit the podcast, Alan. I might write. I might just lose all sanity altogether. Don't make me look like an idiot. But this team is the best team structure wise in this division, and they don't give me a reason not to put them at the top. But oh my God. I'm actually shaking right now that I have them up this high. I'm shaking right now.
Well, you chose to do this. I meant
to have the Chiefs there, and then at the end of it, I'm like, oh shit, okay, I guess listen, they're juicy.
You gotta go with what it says. And listen, okay, so I have an exercise. I have an exercise for you. But first, I want to give so I had them going 10-7 this year, and I had them making the playoffs as a wild card, but finishing third in the AFC West.
Yep. Okay.
So I still have a team ahead of them, but I do have them making the playoffs this year and getting in. And I think that's the next step. Like, I know people want to anoint them as the Super Bowl sleeper and all this stuff, but the next step for the Chargers is just simply making the playoffs, right? Because as great as Justin Herbert has been in the 2 years, they have not done that. And they had the opportunity last year. In that final game against the Raiders, you win that game, you're in the playoffs. As simple as that. And they didn't get it done. They didn't get it done, right? So I'm going to have to see it before I anoint them in that way. And that's where I do think they are a playoff team this year. Khalil Mack, J.C. Jackson, those are big-time improvements for this defense. That defense is loaded in talent, absolutely loaded in talent. Can they stay healthy? And will it work is another thing, but they have the talent there, and we know in the quarterback in Justin Herbert. So I've got an exercise for you, Mitch.
Okay.
You had the Chargers going 13-4 and winning their division, right?
Yep.
And you had the Miami Dolphins going 10-7 and not making the playoffs. God. Okay. If you switched Tua and Justin Herbert, how differently would you feel about those situations? if you flip-flopped those teams' quarterbacks. Because I would argue that if you put Herbert on the Dolphins, you'd probably have a similar record. If Justin Herbert was on the Dolphins, I'm saying 12 or 13 wins for the Dolphins.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Right.
Justin Herbert goes to the Dolphins. Yeah.
So it's just – so my thought with this is it's just simply the quarterback. Because I look at those rosters, right? The Chargers probably have a better roster all around. But there's a lot of talent on both of those rosters. And they seem like they're in really similar situations. And it's just simply like, here's a young quarterback we believe in. And here's one that we don't as much. And that's kind of the outlook, generally speaking, on the difference between a Miami and a Los Angeles.
Yeah. 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 You're right. I think
there's a general thought on Tua versus her. I mean, they were picked right after one another in the draft, right? Herbert goes 6.
I think Justin
Tua
Herbert
goes 5.
Justin Herbert is a better quarterback than Tua Tagovailoa, and he gets more out of what roster is around him than Tua does. 100%.
Sure.
100%. Yeah. I totally misunderstood.
You're good. Totally just thinking about those rosters made me think, you know, it seems like those are similar spots, and maybe the only difference is if Miami drafted Justin Herbert instead of Tua back in, you know, 2020, right? How different do things look? How different are those situations? You know, with those guys going back to back, certainly an interesting thought exercise there. So
Justin Herbert goes to the Dolphins. We're not talking about the Bills being the lock for the AFC East, I think.
Hey, yeah. Brian Flores may still have a job. Who knows? I mean, there's a lot of things that could change. Okay, Mitch. We've gotten the two playoff teams so far. We each have the Kansas City Chiefs and the Los Angeles Chargers locked in here. Last year, the only other playoff team in this division besides Kansas City was the Las Vegas Raiders, who won that Week 18 matchup against the Chargers, went 10-7, and earned that playoff spot. Do you have the Raiders repeating and earning a playoff spot in 2022?
For the first time since 0102, the Raiders repeat as playoff participants.
Okay.
At 11-6, the 7 seed, 11-6 might be just a shy rich, maybe 10-7. But I just look at this offense, man, and the opportunities are endless for the Raiders offensively. We all know the defense has been a struggle for them for a long time, and that the defense is going to be a question mark. They made some great additions defensively, Chandler Jones being one of those. But I think that the Raiders right now, outside of the division, I actually have them going 2-4 in the division, but winding up at 11-6. Like, I think that they're going to lose the majority of their games within division because of how tough it is. I think that the Raiders are a team that's primed to go. You pair up Davante Adams and Derek Carr, former college teammates, roommates. And I think that a lot of things can go right for the Vegas Raiders. Derek Carr, like I said, it's on the hill right now, a top five MVP candidate. I think that this addition of Davante elevates him to a different level, and that we're going to see the Raiders have a ton of success under Josh McDaniels, an offensive mind with a stacked offense. They may give up 31 a game, but they might put up 37 a game. Who knows? I think they'll just outscore everyone and get themselves to an 11-6 record. Into the playoffs at a 7.
I had Vegas repeating at 10-7, but missing out on the playoffs. This was the one AFC West team I did not have making the playoffs. And in a tiebreaker, 10-7, same record as Miami, same record as Cincinnati, but only one of those teams gets in that final spot. And I think Vegas is going to be there, right? It's just a matter of division, interdivision play. How many wins can you get? Can you earn tiebreakers over the Chargers and Broncos and, you know, to guarantee you get that wild card spot over somebody else? I think that's what it'll ultimately come down to. My issue with the Raiders, and we talked about this in our way too early predictions back in May, and it was the same position. I had them just missing out with a good record being in that spot. And the Raiders are just the team I have the most questions about going into this year. Like the offense, Devontae Adams, Josh McDaniels there, I think that's going to be better for them. Their offensive line is still at best average, and their run game last year was awful. Can Josh Jacobs in that run game be better with Josh McDaniels? We'll see. But the offensive line is still a question, but the defense is really a question. And that secondary, they did absolutely nothing to address and help. And it's just not going to be good. And so I'm with you. Like, they could score 30 a game, but if they're giving up 30 a game, it's going to be tough to win a lot of games like that. You're going to find yourself in some tough losses if the defense can't get stops. And when you compare it to the Chargers and to the Broncos and to the Chiefs, the Raiders have by far the worst defense of those four teams.
Sure.
But I think offensively, all of them are pretty equal in that regard. There may be some better than others, but for the most part, all four of those are going to be competent offenses. But that defense is a big weakness, I think, for the Raiders. And that's why I think ultimately they'll end up as the ones left out.
I know that they were in a lot of one-score games last year. I think when you look at this, though, this is a very interesting perspective, I think. When you look at all the one-score games they're in, all the distractions they had, the lack of the running game suffering, the offensive line play being shoddy at times. If they can make a playoff run with Rich Bisaccia at the helm and all the distractions that came around them and the roster got better, why couldn't they do it with Josh McDaniels? Why couldn't they? I just think that there's a lot of things that point in the right direction for the Raiders. Now, they're not perfect. They have plenty of flaws they need to discuss or they need to address, but I think there's more than enough there for them to make a serious playoff push and, sure. and get this in.
I think that would be true, Mitch, in every other year if their division didn't add Russell Wilson and J.C. Jackson and Khalil Mack and like all, and it didn't have Patrick Mahomes at the top of it, right? I think any other year you see the improvements they've made to that team and you're like, easy, right? It's there. You can see the improvements, but everybody else got better too in a lot of ways. And I think that makes this, again, this is just going to be a fun race to watch how this division plays out. We got one more team here that we haven't talked about, Mitch, and that's the Denver Broncos, who did finish last in this division in 2021 at 7-10. I had the Broncos making the playoffs. I had them as the second team in this division, 11-6, and earning the 5 seed in the wild card. But you had Denver missing the playoffs.
I was not fair to Denver. I'll say that. I was not fair to Denver. I think they'll be much closer in this wild card race. They wound up at 8-9 when I picked games. I don't think that that's fair to them, though.
Ken.
I think closer to the 10-win mark is much more fair. You look at – I know that they added Russell Wilson. Brand new head coach, Nathaniel Hackett, steps in. Brand new scenario with what he's got around him. No chemistry build whatsoever. He's going to have to continue to work on that. You look at the targets that he has. Cortland Sutton, can he become a true number one? Jerry Jeudy, haven't seen it. KJ Hamler, haven't seen it. Alberto, haven't seen it. It's just for the same reason you have about the Raiders with the question marks. There's just this, a lot of question marks surrounding the Denver Broncos. I think in past years, if this was Seattle, we'd be saying, it's Russell Wilson. He'll find a way to get him in. Brand new territory, though, and I think he's fully capable of getting him in, and I think that they have a legitimate shot. Like I said, I was unfair to him, but just a lot of questions about what Russell Wilson has around him, and it was just hard for me to – I think they're going to win a lot of games on defense. It's just hard for me to – put them above the Raiders right now.
Yeah, I think with Denver, and this is going to be one of those teams that I am more bullish on this season. I believe that Denver is going to be a successful regular season team. I think they're going to win some games. And I know a lot of people are pushing back on that, pushing back on Russ, new head coach, new situation. And I'm with you on that. But the running back situation is great. Javonte Williams, Melvin Gordon, that is a great tandem. Whoever gets the most carries out of, however that shakes out, is going to be great. The offensive line is at least above average. It's not great. It's not one of the best, but they are at least average to above average on offensive line. And the pass catching options are there, and they're not, you know, much off from what Russell Wilson's had to deal with over the years. The one thing that sells me on Denver is the defense, Mitch. And last year, this team, which went 7-10, by the way, was third in scoring defense in the NFL. They only averaged 18.9 points per game given up on defense. And even though their defense only gave up 19 points a game, they could only win 7. That's how bad the offense was. So that tells me, all right, you've got a young defense. It's only going to get better. Pat Surtain was excellent this year, last year. This is a breakout year for Pat Surtain. You know, I mean, we could be talking Pro Bowl, all pro type season for a Pat Surtain. There's young pieces on this defense getting better. And then you add the improvement of Russell Wilson, and it may take some time. The first half of the season might be a little rough, right? It's not going to start off magical. But I think by the second half of the season, when Russ is comfortable, when they're all on the same page, I just think this is going to be a really good team and a really balanced team that can run the ball, that can pass the ball, that can play defense, and they're going to be a tough out. So 11-6 felt pretty good for me. I don't think Denver has a shot to win the division. I think they have the least likely opportunity to win the division, even though I had them going second, because I just don't think it's that high of them, the ceiling. I think the Chargers or the Raiders could have a higher ceiling to win it. But I do think Denver is the most likely other playoff team in this division outside of Kansas City because of the balance along the roster and the fact that they're not the Chargers, and we can trust them maybe a little more. So that's why I had Denver where I had them again, 11-6 and in the 5 seed. So,
gotcha.
Mitch, that's it for the AFC. Let's run through real quick. Just give me the playoff teams that you have from the AFC by division. So do you go through your divisions and just let's remind the people of who we have making the playoffs from the AFC.
So I got Buffalo at the 1 seed. I have the Chargers at the 2 seed. I guess I could just look at this. Bengals at the 3 seed, Colts at the 4 seed, Chiefs at the 5 seed, Ravens at the 6 seed, and Raiders at the 7 seed.
Okay, and I had Baltimore at the 1 seed, Kansas City at the 2 seed, I had Buffalo at the 1 seed, Kansas City at the 2 seed, Baltimore at the 3 seed, Indianapolis at the 4 seed, Denver at the 5 seed, Los Angeles at the 6 seed, and Miami at the 7 seed. So the only difference there we had a couple of differences in our playoff teams. I had Miami, Denver, and you had Cincinnati and Vegas, right? Those were the two differences there.
Yes, yes.
Okay. All righty. Well, that's going to do it for the AFC. We're going to take a quick break and hit a mid-roll. And on the other side, we'll get into our NFC predictions. So stick around and we'll be right back. Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening. But if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for?
Welcome back in to the Sports Hour with Mitch, Mo, and Dallin. Hope you enjoyed your little break there. It is the Megasode. And we're doing a preview on all 32 NFL teams before the Week 1 games. Week 1 games coming up next Thursday. Dallin, we are officially 1 week away from real NFL football.
Holy cow. Bills, Rams, that'll be a great way to kick off the season.
Oh, what a way to kick it off. Possibly a Super Bowl preview. Who knows?
There you go.
We just went through the whole AFC. Now we got a whole another half lead to go through. We're going to get into the NFC right now. And why don't we start in the NFC North?
Sounds good. Yeah. Green Bay Packers won this division last year. Only team with a winning record last year in this division. 13-4 for the high on ayahuasca Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers in 2021.
I love that fancy team name change, by the way.
Thanks.
I love that.
Ayahuasca High, yeah, because I got Aaron Rodgers on the team. And the image is perfect. It's him from the podcast, but it's got some like psychedelic things going on.
You know what? It would have been even more perfect. You know what? Remember it was the Aaron Rodgers to Denver rumors for a while. Had he gone to Denver, you could have had perfect. You would have had the John Denver plug there. You would Ayahuasca High, Colorado. You would have had the perfect deal there.
Oh. That is true, but he freaking ruined it staying in Green Bay. Well, he will be in Green Bay this year, Mitch, and he will be without Devontae Adams, which is going to play a role this season, no doubt. But I don't think that the impending changes affects their status as the division champs in the NFC North. I did have Green Bay winning this division again. I had them at 12-5, and I had them as a 3 seed.
12-5, 3 seed seems about right. As much as I would love to put this team at 0-17 because of how much I hate them, they have the Rat King under center, Aaron Rodgers. El Raton del Rey.
That's right.
I would love to put them at 0-17. I can't do it. I mean, this is the best team in the division. I have them 11-6, 4 seed, 3-3 in the division. There's nothing around Aaron Rodgers that's super exciting. I mean, Aaron Jones is obviously a reliable back. We have to acknowledge the great talent that is Aaron Jones. We have to acknowledge the fact that despite what it looks like on paper, the Packers seem to put together a top half defense year in and year out. Another year of Matt LaFleur with Aaron Rodgers. Those two, as tumultuous as sometimes the relationship may seem from the outside, inside, I think there's a good relation. There's a good working relationship there, and they're going to find a way to get this done. Alan Lazard, another hot take, is going to emerge as a true number wide receiver one. And I think that he has the perfect opportunity to do that with no Devontae Adams, with no MVS, where he was clearly the third option in that offense. He has the opportunity to emerge as number one. How much they use Christian Watkins is definitely yet to be seen. How much they involve Sammy Watkins or Randall Cobb, which we know that Aaron Rodgers loves his Randall Cobb. He's the reason Randall Cobb is back in Green Bay. How much Robert Tonyan is a part of the offense. Aaron Rodgers will find a way to get it done. Him and Matt LaFleur have a great working relationship, and the Packers are going to be a 4 seed at 11-6.
Yeah, I just think with the Packers, like, the offensive pass-catching options are certainly thin. And they were before they lost Devontae Adams, right? I mean, Devontae Adams is one of the best wide receivers in the league, but after him, it's been slim pickings for a number of years, right? And it's certainly worse off there. But I just trust the offense. I trust Aaron Rodgers. And I think Aaron Jones is going to have a bigger role as a pass catcher than maybe we're anticipating. And maybe that means more just traditional running back role for an A.J. Dillon and more of a hybrid flex type role for an Aaron Jones, which could be an interesting wrinkle in this. But this defense is going to be good, and Aaron Rodgers and them are going to be good enough on offense that I think this is certainly Green Bay's division to lose. But I did have another playoff team from this division, Mitch.
As did I.
As did you. And it's the Minnesota Vikings, right?
100%. Yep.
I think the Vikings are poised for a step in the right direction. 8-9 last year, as bad as things felt about the Vikings, and especially their defense, which under that final season of Mike Zimmer really took a dip. They were still 8-9 last year, sort of right on the cusp of the playoffs. They're just a game back of Philly at 9-8. So I had the Vikings going 10-7, maybe sort of putting the fear of God into the Packers at the end of this season as far as the division race goes. Like, maybe it's close towards those last couple weeks. I do think Green Bay wins it, but I think Minnesota's a playoff team, and their defense might struggle still But that offense with Kevin O'Connell coming from the Los Angeles Rams organization and bringing all those principles over to Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson and Dalvin Cook in this offense, I think it's going to be a – I think the Vikings have a top 10 offense this year. I think that's one of the biggest surprises is how good they are. And I think they're poised to be a playoff team. So I had them at – I had them at 10-7, and I had them as the 5 seed in the NFC.
Yeah, I had them at 10-7 as well, the 6th seed. 5-1 in the division, though. I think they're going to play exceptionally well in this division. Look, Kirk Cousins has been one of the most undervalued quarterbacks in a long time. What this guy brings to the table is better than, I'd say, 75% of the quarterbacks in the league. This guy is a super talent, super arm talent, extremely smart football player, and he has the weapons to go get it done. Now, we know what Justin Jefferson is, right? Perennial Pro Bowler. Guy's an absolute monster. Adam Thielen, your ideal slot guy, right? The guy that you can absolutely trust for 10 targets a game, 7-8 catches, going to get you 80 yards and a TD. KJ Osborne has slowly started to emerge as a weapon for Kirk Cousins, and just added Jalen Reagor like today. So like they have four guys. Not that Jalen Reagor is anything super reliable. We haven't seen that from him during his time in Philadelphia. But you couple that with what Dalvin Cook can bring you on the ground game. Alexander Mattison as a change of pace guy. The defense. This could be a very scary team come playoff time. I don't think they're going to cause a whole bunch of waves during the regular season, but come playoff time, I could see the Vikings being a very scary team.
Yeah, I love that. I think this is just going to be a very explosive offense. And I mean, I think we're obviously looking at the passing game, right? And the potential for Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson. Can Jefferson have a Cooper Kupp-esque season? Can we see the type of improvement that Matthew Stafford saw coming from Detroit to LA? Can we see a similar type of growth as far as Kirk Cousins going from where he was at with Mike Zimmer and that staff to Kevin O'Connell and those Rams, sort of concepts? But I think the biggest beneficiary is Dalvin Cook. It's Dalvin Cook because at its core, the Rams offense wants to run the ball. Like they've gotten away from that over the years, but when it was at its core and at its peak, it was Todd Gurley putting up MVP type numbers in that offense, right? And Dalvin Cook is certainly talented enough to do that. And we've seen that already in his young career. So if he can stay healthy, I think he's going to be the feature of this offense and put up crazy big numbers. So this offense will be fun. I think the Vikings will be a fun team in 2022. We both have them at 10-7. And sneaking into the wild card. Let's go to your Chicago Bears, Mitch, who finished 6-11 last season. New things ahead, right? New head coach with Matt Eberflus and Justin Fields in year two. They went 6-11 last year. I had the Bears. I'm sorry. I had them going 5-12. A similar spot to last year, but I just think there hasn't been a ton of improvement on this offense or on this team. And as great as Justin Fields can be in year two, and I think he will obviously be better, I just think there's a lot of limitations around him that's not going to lead to winning. But I do think it is a successful year for Justin Fields in the sense that after this season, the Bears feel comfortable with him as the guy. We know he's it. It's just a matter of the team around him. But I'm just not going to buy into the Bears. I can't do it. So. 5-12 for me, man.
You're 100% right. The Bears are not going to be very good. I got some serious reservations about the Bears. Obviously, the wide receiver core, god awful. Velus Jones is going to be one of the worst picks in Chicago Bears history. A 24-year-old wide receiver. That's going to have if he has a prime, the shortest prime we've ever seen in football history. Darnell Mooney, that's it. We go ahead and make a trade for an Akeel Harry because that's going to solve the wide receiver issues. look, the Bears are clearly in a position right now to rebuild. And they made that very evident with the Khalil Mack trade. You don't trade a cornerstone piece like that if you're not intending to commit to a rebuild like the Bears are going to go into. I expect several years of struggling Bears football. I have them at 6-11. I think that that is – I hate to say it. That's a ceiling. That's a ceiling. I mean, this is a team that's just – has lost their way. I have great Justin Field vibes right now. He looked great in that last postseason or that last preseason game. I have hopes that Dante Pettis could be a contributor to the offense, but I don't see a scenario where the Chicago Bears find themselves in a position hunting for a wild card spot. I just don't see it. I don't think it's going to happen. 6-11, missing the playoffs, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say it, but Bear down.
Yeah, I mean, it's just this. It's just where they're at right now. New head coach, second year quarterback. It's fine. What you are looking for as a Bears fans this year, and what Bears fans should be looking for, is who are the building blocks moving forward? Who are these foundational pieces we can feel for sure about? Right, Roquan is up in the air. He may not want to be here anymore, but you got to see it from Justin Fields. You got to see it from some of these defensive players. And you know, you're hoping that that's the foundation you have moving forward. Detroit, Mitch. Detroit finished three.
I do want to point this out, by the way. I just real quick, the Bears from 1970 to 1978 never won more than 9 games. Rebuild. They get into the early 80s, still starting to slowly rebuild. They get to the 83 season, 8-8, 84, 10-6, 85, 15-1 Super Bowl champions. I'm going to rest on my laurels. That would say we are going to bring back the 85 Bears. We're going to have this rebirth of Chicago Bears football. Chicago will once again reign supreme in the NFC North. We just might be about 6-7 years out.
So like 2031 Super Bowl. Get ready, Bears fans. It's coming.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Mitch, Detroit, 3-13-1 last year. Second pick in the NFL draft. One of the worst teams. I do think there's market improvement for the Lions this year. I like what Dan Campbell is doing. I like that they're building through the trenches. I like the picks that they've made. I think they have the right young pieces in place to still be a not good team, but to be moving in the right direction. So I have them improving by 4 wins and going 7-10. 7-10 for the Lions and finishing ahead of the Bears.
I have them 8-9.
8-9. Even more. Okay. I had them at 8-9 for a second. I flirted with it and it felt weird. I was too afraid. I was like, Jared Goff, ugh, and then I backed off.
Look, I said this in our superlatives episode. This is going to be an NBA League Pass team.
Yeah.
A team you turn on that's going to be a ton of fun to watch. From sideline to sideline and everything in between. This is going to be a very fun team to watch. And, you know, I think that they're the subject of Hard Knocks right now for a reason. I think that this team is going to be a very, very fun team to watch. Tons of talent. I think that they can work around Jared Goff and try to make him as successful as possible. Dan Campbell does a great job over there in Detroit. And we're looking at a borderline over 500 team.
Wow. I love it, man. I'm actually excited for the Lions this year. That feels so weird to say, but I am actually excited for the Detroit Lions in 2022. Mitch, let's jump over to the NFC East now. And last season, the Dallas Cowboys won this division with a record of 12-5. Two playoff teams from this division, the Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles, who had finished 9-8. So a couple playoff teams last year from the NFC East. And when I look at this division, I don't see much of a change. I see a lot of what we saw last year. But the biggest difference for me, and this is where I want to start, is I believe the Philadelphia Eagles are the team to beat in the NFC East. And I believe the Eagles will win this division. I had them at 11-6 and the 4 seed in the NFC.
You're 100% right. They are going to be the team to beat. I was pretty high on the Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly. 13-4, 2 seed in the NFC.
Okay. Y'all love it. Let's go.
I love Jalen Hurts so much. I love Jalen Hurts. I think that he could be Lamar Jackson 2.0, a better passer, same kind of strength using the legs, and that the Eagles are going to be a team that, in my mind right now, their division to lose. I think they're the most talented. I think that they are going to be the better coached team, and the Eagles are definitely going to be someone that the NFC should definitely be worried about.
No doubt. And I mean, obviously they were a playoff team last year at 9-8, but I just see that next step, right? 11, 12 wins for the Eagles this year with the additions that they made. Obviously trading for AJ Brown and adding that piece to your young quarterback's repertoire is a great move. But also trading for Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, right, a couple days ago from the Saints, just like another secondary piece to throw alongside Darius Slay and all the talent they have on that defense. This defense is a top five defense, Mitch. This is a very good defense, and I think they're going to play like it this year. And if the defense is that good and the run game can resemble something of what they did last year, this is going to be a very good team. If Jalen Hurts can make a big leap in the next direction, then they're even better. Like, the potential is there for, as you pointed out, a 13-win season for the Eagles. I really do believe that. But I had them at 11-6 with a little more tempered expectations. But I'm there with you that I think the Eagles are being slept on. I think they are one of the best teams in the NFC, and I think they're going to prove it this year. They should be a fun watch.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Okay, Cowboys won this division last year. I still had the Cowboys making the playoffs. I had them as the 6th seed at 10-7. So just a game back of Philly. I do think they've gotten a bit worse. I think the injuries, questions that they have is what brings them down for me. But with how weak the NFC is, I still think Dallas is a playoff team.
I do too. I have them at the 7th seed. I have them at 9-8. This is just, and it's one of those teams too, that like, when December hits, what can't go wrong does go wrong for the Dallas Cowboys. And
true.
I think that we're going to be looking at a similar situation. The Dallas Cowboys, or something's going to go wrong, and we'll be looking at a 9-8 team and wondering what the heck happened. They were 8-4 when they came in after November, and now they're 9-8. What happened to the Dallas Cowboys? It's going to be just same old Dallas Cowboys stuff. It's been happening since 1995. Why should I give them a reason to continue to ride hot then? So 9-8, 7th seed for the Cowboys.
Yeah, and I think with Dallas, the defense was so good last year. But again, when we were talking about earlier about regression and who's going to take that step back, I talked about Tennessee. I think Dallas is another candidate for that. You look at their turnovers. I mean, just Trevon Diggs and his interceptions. That was just absurd. Micah Parsons coming on the way that he did. That defense hit a level that nobody saw possible, but it's going to come back down to earth. And if they are an average defense at best, with the, you know, some of the questions at wide receiver and help on the offensive line, I just don't think it goes as well. So yeah, well, 11 wins, I think that's pretty fair.
And a lot of people forget Trevon Diggs had the gaudy interception numbers, but he got burned a lot.
He was also one of the worst coverage corners in the league, even though he had 10 picks. So yeah, exactly. You know, I think that a lot of that was, you know, fluky sort of things that regress back more towards the mean here in 2022. Mitch, last year, Washington, the Commanders, finished third in the division at 7-10. I had them finishing third as well this year with a similar record. I had them at 6-11.
Yeah, so did I. Actually tied for the bottom. I think that I've totally given up on Carson Wentz. I don't think he's an answer for anything. And it's just because he makes way too many panic plays. Like he gets in tough situations and he doesn't handle that stuff well, and it's going to come back and bite Washington in the butt a lot. I know last year Washington was a team I had making a wild card I was really high on, and that just is kind of fallen off now. The defense has not gotten any better. I hope the defense plays better than what they actually were. I think the defense is better than what they've actually played over the last year, but I just don't see this offense going anywhere with them. And if the defense stays the course and plays where we think they should play, this team shouldn't be any better than 6-11.
Yeah, I think ultimately it's how much of an improvement is Carson Wentz over Taylor Heinicke, right? Like, is it really that much of an improvement?
We'll find out, right?
I mean, if they win 9 or 10 games, then we can say, all right, it was a bigger difference. But I suspect it's going to be more of the same for Washington next year, and that's reflected in the records that we have them both at 6-11. Mitch, Giants were 3-14 last year, or 4-13 last year, excuse me. I had them going 3-14 this year. I think the Giants are a rebuilding team that has one of the worst rosters in the league, that has some interesting pieces to build around, but this is an opportunity for Brian Daboll to feel this roster out, to figure out what he has in Daniel Jones, and to figure out what direction this team needs to head in the next offseason. Dressing quarterback in the draft, whatever it is, this is just a feel it out year, and I just don't think they're going to win a lot of games as a result.
I have a lot of confidence in Brian Daboll. And so for that reason, they are going 6-11. I do think this is the last year we see Daniel Jones as a starter. I don't know if he starts the entire year. They may bench him and go with whatever backup they got. Just
Tyrod Taylor. That's
they might go with Tyrod Taylor for the last maybe 4 or 5 weeks. I truly think this is the last time we see Daniel Jones as a starter in the NFL, and probably for and it's gonna be all for good, because it's definitely gonna set the Giants in the correct direction, or keep them in the correct direction of a rebuild.
Yeah, listen, if they're in the top five of the draft and they have an opportunity at Bryce Young or CJ Stroud or maybe whoever else finds themselves up at the top of the board by the time draft comes around, that's going to be a fine position for the Giants to be in. If you learned, hey, Andrew Thomas and Evan Neal, those guys are our lockdown tackles for the next decade. Those guys are solid. We feel great about that. Kayvon Thibodeau developed into the pass rusher we saw out of him. Perfect. We got these little pieces, and now let's go get the quarterback. We'll see how that plays out for the Giants this year. But yes, I just don't think, as things have been for the last couple of years, it's not going to be fun in New York. But hopefully Daboll brings some more hope for the future. Mitch, let's jump over to the NFC South, where last year the Tampa Bay Buccaneers won this division with a record of 13-4. They were the lone playoff team from this division last season, Mitch, and I also believe that not only will they repeat as the NFC South champs, but they will again be the lone playoff team from this division. I had the Buccaneers going 13-4 again, and as the 2 seed in the NFC.
I had them at the 3 seed, 12-5. Quite honestly, though, too rich for me. Because I think there's a team in here that I had lower that I want to be higher on. I think that, and we're going to ride with the Bucks at 3-seed, 12-5, but I think that this could very well be the year we see Tom Brady's age start to show. He's coming back age 45. He was retired for 40 days. And I think he might have a little, I know it's hard to say a hangover because, he wasn't retired all that long and he didn't really miss any football activity, but this could be the year that we see Tom Brady really start to fall off a little bit. I have all the utmost respect and confidence in Todd Bowles to lead that team to a playoff appearance. But I don't know what Tom Brady's exactly going to do as a 45-year-old quarterback. We've never seen it. We've never seen this happen before. Someone would be that successful at this age. And I know we said that at 44. And I think we'll say that until the till the year that he finally retires. And so
until it happens. Yeah.
So I just 12-5 is too rich. But that's where I got them at the 3 seed right now.
Yeah, I do think that they have one of the more clearer paths to the division lead, which is why I think it's natural to get that 12-13 win mark a little higher than maybe they would in another division. But I just think they're returning a lot of what we know, a lot of familiar faces, new head coach, but not a new head coach in a way. And so a lot of continuity there. How it translates come playoff time, how the age of Tom Brady, the offense looks like at that time, I think is going to be the biggest question. But as far as winning this division and, you know, winning games, I think the Bucks are going to be well on their way there. But you mentioned a team that you are maybe a little higher on. Who are you talking about here?
Well, and this is a team actually that I had at a lower record than I would have liked them to be at. And that's your Carolina Panthers.
Okay.
So I want to preface this by saying they didn't make the playoffs. I actually had them at 5-12. But
wow,
what I really wanted them to be at, this is just the way it played out, by the way. It's just the way it played out, baby. This is the Megasode. But I want them at 8-9. I want them 8-9. I think that Baker Mayfield is a significant upgrade over Sam Darnold. We just, if you haven't heard the news already, he got asked about what he wants to do to the Browns week one, and he said, and I quote, "I'm going to fuck them up." And I believe Baker when he says that. I think that he's got a lot of vengeance. He's got a lot to prove. And I think that he's an ultra talented quarterback. I think that he gets a bad rap for the time that he had in Cleveland. The numbers may not support that, but I think that he's got the talent and the ability to do that. I have them at 5-12, third in the division, but I think this is a team that very easily could go 8-9, 9-8, not a playoff team, but they're going to be a team that hangs around a little bit and maybe spoils some playoff hopes.
Well, lucky for you, Mitch, I did have the Carolina Panthers at 8-9.
There you go.
And it felt weird doing it. All right. I don't like being the homer, right?
That's my job.
Exactly. And not that I try to avoid it, but I try to have, you know, an objective view of every NFL team. But I mean, you look at their schedule, and again, this was a team that finished last in the division last year at 5-12. So they have a last place schedule they're playing against, which helps. An improvement in a lot of areas. The offensive line is improved. The quarterback position is certainly improved. If you have a healthy Christian McCaffrey, the running back room is vastly improved. And then on top of that, you have a young defense who for the majority of the season last year was the only good thing about the Panthers was, wow, but man, this defense is kind of fun. Jeremy Chinn and Brian Burns and Dante Jackson. And we've got J.C. Horn coming back after missing his entire rookie year. We've seen nothing from their first round pick last year. So they have essentially two top 10 rookies this year in J.C. Horn and Ike McQuanu. I just think it's all there for the Panthers to improve. Now, what does that improvement look like? Is it 7 wins? Is it 9 wins? Is it, you know, like what is the improvement? But I do think the improvement is there. And I do believe in Baker. I believe in Baker as an above average NFL quarterback. And for the Panthers, that's the best thing they've had since the first half of 2018 with Cam Newton. It has been awful since that point. So above average quarterback is going to do well for Carolina. And 8-9 is where I landed. And I felt really good about it. I feel good about 8-9. I think that's pretty good. So I'm glad you were there with me, even though you weren't, it didn't play out for you.
The chips didn't fall that way, but I don't really believe in what actually came out. I believe they're better than 5-12. Yes.
Okay. The other team I had in this division with that same record, Mitch, at 8-9 was the New Orleans Saints, which I'm assuming you had second and you had them at 8-9 as well.
Yes. Yes, sir.
I think with the Saints, so the Saints went 9-8 last year of Sean Payton, Jameis got injured or hot start got injured. You know, you saw Taysom, you saw Ian Book. I mean, it's a mess for them last year and they still went 8-9 and I think the opportunity is there for them to be a playoff team. I would not be surprised if at the end of the season, the Saints were the 7 seed, 9-8, 10-7 sinking in the playoffs, but there's just a lot of new, and a lot of credit is being given to the Saints for people that aren't in the building anymore, right? Like, we're used to Sean Payton and Drew Brees and the Saints and how well that team was run and how organized it was and how talented it was. And we're just seeing that product and saying, well, it's the Saints, so they'll be up there. But those guys aren't there anymore. It's Jameis Winston and it's Dennis Allen as the head coach, you know, and Pete Carmichael's still there. Dennis Allen was the DC. Like, it's familiarity, but the major players are gone. And we're asking for Chris Olave to have a big role. And Trevor Penning was supposed to have a big role. And now he's injured. And the defense has been good, but can they sustain that? They lost some big pieces. Marcus Williams was a big piece. Teron Armstead was a big piece. So I just don't see how they improve upon last year, right? And they were 9-8 last year. So that's why I ended up at 8-9, just because I maybe around the same is the best case scenario for them, but I just don't see how it improves after what they've been through in the offseason.
Yeah, it seems like it's like they took the right steps to move forward after Sean Payton and Drew Brees, and just nothing's gone right for them. You know what I mean?
It's just okay. Yeah, I mean, they're in a tough spot, and they've done the best with what they could do, but it's just certainly not the same situation they had.
Right, and I think that Jameis Winston could have a very big year. Good in the good way and the bad way. I think that you could see him throw for 40 touchdowns. He could also throw 40 interceptions. Who knows? I think the best thing that the Saints can do is dial in the defense, right? You mentioned Carmichael was there. Continue to build upon the offense and let Jameis be Jameis. Jameis is going to make mistakes, but he can do some really great things for you if you just let him play his game. Don't constrict him. Just let him go out there and play his game. But also know, you know, you can keep a long leash on him, but you have to know when to pull it back at the same time, because he can get a little wild and crazy sometimes. We know Jameis. We saw him in Tampa Bay.
30 interceptions and 30 touchdowns.
He's got his own 30 for 30 without even having an ESPN special. Look, you just have to know how to balance all these things. It's a team of wild cards. It's a team of wild cards. And you have to know how to balance all that. And I know Dallas Allen, his last head coaching stint in the previously Oakland Raiders was not a good stint. He's going to have a second shot here in New Orleans, and I hope that he can figure out how to balance all of these wild cards that he has on his team.
Yeah, and that's not even to mention Michael Thomas, right, who had a record-breaking season not too long ago but has not been healthy since, and he's coming back and he's healthy. Like, what does that do for their offense? I mean, that could be huge. We just, again, as you wisely pointed out.
Been like something like 750 days since he last scored a touchdown. Like, yeah. it's been like pre-COVID
two full
season.
Seasons, essentially.
Pre-COVID season since he last scored. So, like, you have to find a way to get him involved. If he still has that level of talent, which I think he does. I think he does. It's whether or not he wants to exert that effort to show that talent, I think, right now, because New Orleans is in a rough spot. They're in a weird spot. Not a rough spot, but a weird spot. They're weird.
Right? No doubt. Weird spot, I think, is a great way to put it. Mitch, the final team in this conference, the AFC South, the NFC South, the Atlanta Falcons, who were third in the division last year at 7-10. I had them finishing last, had them going 0-6 in the division, and I had them finishing with a record of 3-14.
I had them at 2-15, 1-5 in the division. This team's just not going to be very good.
Yeah. Just where they're at in their team building process, and that's fine. You know, you've got some fun pieces. If you want to see Drake London and Kyle Pitts emerge as a top young pass catching duo in the league, and guys that you feel confident that if we get our quarterback, then we're set. We got our quarterback, we got options for him, and then we got to build the defense out. But that's what you're hoping out of this year. You know, those two guys emerging. If a Tyler Algier emerges as a great running back value, if guys on the defense emerge, like, even better. If Desmond Ridder turns out to be legit, like, even better. But you're just looking for foundational pieces, and you're hoping to be at the top of the draft board come April.
Got to build somewhere. I think Algier, like I've already said this, Algier may be the best running back that comes out of this draft as a fifth rounder. But you're right. Got to get foundational pieces, and this is kind of the start of the buildup for Atlanta. Sure. So don't expect anything big out of them for a few years to come, I think.
Yep. All right, Mitch, final division here, the NFC West. Last season, the Los Angeles Rams won this division at 12-5. We had three playoff teams from this division, three teams with at least 10 wins, Rams, Cardinals, and Niners, respectively. I only had two playoff teams from this division in 2023. And let's start at the top with the defending Super Bowl champion, Los Angeles Rams. I had them again winning this division. I think they are the clear favorite, and you'll get that sense from the record predictions. But I had Los Angeles, the Rams, as the number one seed in the NFC and an NFL best 14-3.
Yeah, I had them 13-4 and the one seed in the West, or one seed in the conference. They just got
better.
Where
did they get worse?
They just that,
like, they won the Super Bowl last year, right, Mitch? Tell me where they got worse, because every Super Bowl team besides the Bucs team, where they brought back all 22 starters, right? Like, most teams get significantly worse.
Where did the Rams get worse? They got worse in one spot, and that was when Aaron Donald did his best Myles Garrett impression and swung a helmet at someone. But look, sorry, that may have been a bad taste, but who knows? Look, they didn't. They just didn't get worse. They may not have gotten exceptionally better. Well, they did at the wide receiver position. Allen Robinson is an absolute great add.
Crazy sneaky upgrade over Robert Woods. And Robert Woods was a good receiver. I mean, he was a really good receiver.
I mean, you're going to have Allen Robinson and Cooper Kupp to throw to? Excuse me, what? Like, that's just ridiculous. Like, Matt Stafford struck, like, he hit the lotto when he got traded to Los Angeles. The way they structure deals, the way they bring in big names, and the way they basically pay cash to these guys up front is brilliant. Brilliant business as far as sports goes. And so there's no reason that the Rams should finish anywhere out of the first place spot, barring some sort of catastrophic meltdown.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there, Mitch. And I will say, I posed this question, it wasn't rhetorical, because I do think that there is one spot, Mitch, one spot that concerns me for the Rams. Does it concern me for winning this division or, you know, winning 12 games? But when it comes to the playoffs and when they get tested, this will be the one spot, and that's the offensive line, right? Andrew Whitworth is gone. They lost to Austin Corbett, the right guard, and the replacements have not been great. They anticipated a rookie to take over at guard who has not panned out. And so I do think offensive line, at least for the moment, is a question. But could it be solidified by the end of the season? I think that's possible. But I think the offensive line is going to be the one spot. But my pushback to that is you still have Matt Stafford and Cooper Kupp and Allen Robinson and Sean McVay. So I think that even with a subpar offensive line, like, I think they'll be fine. I think they can figure out how to score points even with the below average offensive line. So does it hurt their Super Bowl odds? Does it make them maybe less of a contender? Perhaps. But I also think they improved in ways like Allen Robinson bringing back Troy Hill. This defense is just going to continue to be solid and even better. And I don't think it's stopping anytime soon for LA. We said this after the Super Bowl. It felt like this was the beginning of a window for them, that they were going to be in this competitive window with Matthew Stafford here for a minute. And I think this year is just going to be another year like that.
Oh, 100%.
All right, Mitch. Arizona Cardinals finished second in this division last year, 11-6, made the wild card. As the 5 seed, Kyler Murray gets the extension. We know the drama this offseason. I had Arizona missing the playoffs.
As did I.
Okay. What record did you have for the Cardinals?
7-10. Well, 7-10.
Okay. Okay. I had them at 8-9, so I say wow, but I'm not too far off. Just one win off, but... What is it about this team? Because I have obviously similar thoughts here, but what is it about the Cardinals that makes you think not only just a dip from last year, but a dip to the point that they missed the playoffs?
There's just too much drama going on over there. I just don't think that this is Kyler's great. Kyler's really good. I don't know if Kyler can win and be a perennial playoff type quarterback in the NFL. I just don't. I no matter what you put around him, I mean, you'd have to give him a super team to do that, I think. You know when you pull something out of the fridge and it looks really good, but it smells bad and you know it's gone bad? That's the way that the Cardinals feel right now. It looks really good. It just smells bad. And you kind of have to throw it out and forget about
something. Something is rotting in Arizona. It's hot there. You probably didn't put it in the fridge quick enough. And
something's
it's bad.
Something's just not right in Arizona. And I don't know. I can't pinpoint exactly what it is. I don't know if that starts with Kyler. I don't know if that starts with Cliff Kingsbury. I don't know what it starts with. But something just doesn't feel right in Arizona, and it doesn't feel right to have them as a playoff team. I think that there's just too many things going on for them to actually be successful. They got, you know, they had the whole Kyler drama coming into the offseason. DeAndre Hopkins is going to be out the first six games. They bring in Marquise Brown, but I always screw him up. Marquise Brown. Yeah. They brought in Hollywood. That doesn't seem to fit the bill really for me as far as, you know, they're so confusing, and I just don't like Arizona. I think that's the only explanation I have to give is I just don't like
it. Yeah. They're just confusing. It's just confusing what's happening there. Because despite the fact that it's been semi-successful for the past couple of years, it feels like a non-successful franchise, right? It feels like things aren't going well there, even though on paper and wins and losses, they've had some successful seasons. But ultimately, what it comes down for me, Mitch, I don't think this is on Kyler. I think Kyler has things that he should be criticized for. As a quarterback, as a player, as a leader, I think there are issues. I don't think he's in the tier, of course, of the Mahomes and the Allens and the Burrows and the Herberts. He's like behind those guys clearly, but he has the talent. I think this organization is the problem. I think this organization is the problem. And maybe it's a reflection of their head coach. Maybe it's a reflection of their GM, Steve Keim, who's been there for a very long time in an executive position, who maybe is a little too entrenched in his executive position and could use a new fresh set of eyes on things. I don't know what it is. It doesn't feel like it's only Kyler for me. I don't think if you just put like Justin Herbert or Joe Burrow in this situation that it looks much better than it does right now. I think ultimately it's a dysfunction of the franchise. And that is why we feel this need to like push back on the Cardinals this year and say, I just don't know with the D-Hop suspension, with the losses that they've had in the roster. I just don't know. So, yeah, I mean, I had 8-9, you had 7-10. I think we're on the same page there. It's just tough spot for the Cardinals. I think they need to change somewhere, but I don't know if it's Cliff, but I don't think it's Kyler. I think Kyler could be a winning player. I think it's more situation, but and maybe this year we'll be able to sense that a little bit more. The other playoff team, three teams from this division last year made the playoffs. The final one was the San Francisco 49ers, who went 10-7 and made a run to the NFC Championship game as a wild card team last season. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo is back, but he is not the returning starter. It will be Trey Lance. So a new look for the Niners this year, despite a lot of continuity. I had them making the playoffs again, Mitch, at 9-8. 9-8 as a 7 seed, so 10-7 last year, they go back just by a game, 9-8 with Trey Lance, but it's enough with how good this defense is and my trust in Kyle Shanahan as a head coach that they'll make the playoffs with Trey Lance, but I think it's going to be a tough first half that turns into a dominant 4-1 stretch over the last five games where they just look unstoppable. Trey Lance figures it out. The defense is locked in, and that's how they find themselves in the playoffs.
Yeah, I got them going 10-7, 5 seed in the NFC.
Yeah.
This is a team that Well, I guess for all the same reasons you just mentioned, I trust the defense. I trust Kyle Shanahan. The sample size on Trey Lance is just so small that we don't know exactly what we're going to get from Trey Lance. We know he has the weapons around him. They're going to have about 17 different running backs that, have breakout games.
None of which are Trey Sermon, by the way, their second round pick who they just cut today.
Yeah. Well, and that was never a great fit for Trey Sermon. I don't think that.
If you know you're just going to play the undrafted rookie running backs, why even spend the draft capital on picks? I mean, they did. They took that Tyrion Davis price this year, and they're probably going to cut him next offseason for some undrafted rookie. It's amazing. He should just never, like, Kyle, just have some self-control. When the draft board comes up and and you see a running back, just don't take him. You know you're not going to give him the snaps unless he's in the sixth round. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
It
works.
Crazy.
He makes it work with the Jeff Wilsons, but you know.
Jeff Wilson. Oh my God. But yeah, no, San Francisco find a way to get it done. 10-7 feels just about right. And, you know, a lower seed, a wild card team. That feels right for San Francisco.
Yeah. I mean, this is a playoff roster, right? Who, again, returning a lot of what this team was last year, which was a playoff team in the NFC Championship game. The biggest difference is Trey Lance. And what does that difference look like? That's going to be the difference between a 7 or 8 win campaign and a 10 or 11 win campaign, right? How good that quarterback is. And we'll certainly see what it looks like with Trey Lance. Final team here, Mitch, NFC West, Seattle Seahawks, 7-10 last year, Geno Smith starting, tank for Bryce Young, Russell Wilson 2.0. I got him going 3-14.
Yep, I got him 2-15.
2-15. Listen, Mom and Dad, I know it's going to be a tough year. You're probably not using those season tickets nearly as much as you used to. But hey, I'm telling you, Bryce Young is coming. Russell Wilson 2.0. You're going to love him, right, Mitch?
Oh, you're going to love Bryce Young. I mean, roll damn tide. You're going to love Bryce Young. Great talent.
That's what I'm trying to tell my parents, to talk them off the edge. It's going to be fine, guys. Just a year without a quarterback, you'll be fine. Mitch, that's it for the NFC. Let's run through our playoff seeds for the folks at home. Give us the 7 playoff teams you had from the NFC.
All right. So 1 seed, I had the Los Angeles Rams. 2 seed, the Philadelphia Eagles. 3 seed, Tampa Bay Bucks. 4 seed, the Green Bay Packers. 5 seed, San Francisco 49ers. 6 seed, Minnesota Vikings. And the 7 seed, the Dallas Cowboys.
Okay. I had the 1 seed Rams, 2 seed Bucks, 3 seed Packers, 4 seed Eagles, 5 seed Vikings, 6 seed Cowboys, and the 7 seed, the San Francisco 49ers. So unlike the AFC, Mitch, we didn't differ at all in the 7 teams we picked from the NFC. I think that's an indication of just how not competitive the playoff race feels like in the NFC. In the AFC, there's like 10 or 11 teams that can make it. I feel like outside of like the Saints, there's not another team that we didn't put in the playoffs that I feel strong confidence could be in. I don't know if you feel the same way.
I do feel the same way. There's just, I mean, you have your guys in the NFC and it's wide open in the AFC. Yep. So yeah, absolutely.
No doubt. All right, Mitch, to wrap up the podcast here, we got to give some of our playoff predictions alongside this. So let's go and jump ahead to the conference championship games. And we'll start back with the AFC and give me the 2 teams you have facing off in the AFC championship game and who you have representing the AFC in the Super Bowl.
So in the AFC, I got the Buffalo Bills taking on the Kansas City Chiefs. I know we just talked about the Chiefs and how maybe the grass isn't greener on the other side without Tyreek Hill. I think they still get it done. But you got to give me those damn Bills. I love the Bills. Again, for probably about the 3rd year in a row, I'm all in on the Bills. Bills are representing the AFC and the Super Bowl.
Well, this is the year, right? 3rd time's the charm.
It has to be. It has to be.
Mitch, I also had the 1 seed Bills hosting this playoff game. But I had the 3 seed Baltimore Ravens as the opponent here, upsetting the Chiefs in the divisional round to set up this matchup. And as I alluded to earlier, I do believe that this feels like Buffalo season. Spoiler for next week's podcast, I feel like Josh Allen is going to be the MVP. I think this team is going to be rolling, and this will be a season to remember for Buffalo. So Super Bowl on the way for Buffalo. I have the Bills over the Ravens to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. So we both have the Bills coming out of the AFC. So let's jump over to the NFC. Mitch, and who do you have representing the NFC in the Super Bowl?
NFC title game is going to be the Los Angeles Rams and the Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, I love it.
And I think in a very, very, very tightly contested game, probably game of the year. I can't believe I'm doing this. Give me the Philadelphia Eagles to keep the Rams out of a back-to-back Super Bowl appearance. I'm going to get Eagles-Bills in the Super Bowl.
Wow. I love it, Mitch. I love you rolling with the Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly, baby. Okay. All right. For the NFC, I had the Rams as the one seed hosting the 3-seed Packers in a great matchup. But I have the Rams repeating as the NFC champs. I just feel like they're the strongest team out of that conference. Bucks, Packers, Eagles. I think there's some teams that are interesting, but to me, it is the Rams, and I think they're going to see themselves back in the Super Bowl. So I got the Rams going through for a one seed versus one seed matchup in the Super Bowl. Bills versus Rams. We talked about that Super Bowl preview coming up a week from now, right? On September 8th, Thursday night, to kick off the season, Bills at Rams. And I'm not going to get enough of that. I'm going to want to see it in the Super Bowl again. Bills Rams Super Bowl, Mitch, and I am taking the Bills. This is for Jim Kelly. This is for all those Bills players in the 90s who couldn't get it done. Josh Allen puts them over the edge, beats the Rams, and the Bills win the Super Bowl. That is my pick.
We might as well rebrand ourselves, Dallin. Because we're a Bills podcast. No one circles the wagons quite like the Buffalo Bills. I got the Buffalo Bills over the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl. Give me the Bills. This is for Jim Kelly. This is for Thurman Thomas. This is for Daryl Talley. This is for Bruce Smith. This is for Marv Levy. This is for all those guys. This is for all the Bills fans. This is for Tim Russert, the NBC the NBC news guy that was a big Buffalo Bills fan. This is for Chris Berman, who picked the Buffalo Bills like 8 years in a row to win the Super Bowl in the early 2000s. The Buffalo Bills. No one quite circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. Give me the Bills to win the Super. This is the year. This is the year for the Bills.
Yes, it just feels like it, right? Where last year it felt like they were just going to take a step back after the high of the year before, and they were still growing, but they weathered all that. They had a great second half. They have, you know, that incredible playoff game against the Chiefs, and they just fell short. And it's like that is going to be the motivation, right? That divisional game against the Chiefs coming up that short, knowing we were right there, we should have been there. I think that's going to be all they need to turn it on. I trust Sean McDermott. Even though they lost Brian Daboll, I trust this coaching staff, and just feels like Buffalo's year. So we're rolling with the Bills. You'll love to see it, Mitch. That is it.
We're a big Bills podcast over here.
We love big Bills. Hundreds, 50s, we'll take them. That's it. That's it for the podcast. That's it for the NFL season preview. All 32 teams. Win-loss record predictions for all of those teams and Super Bowl picks for you. We both got the Bills, and we can't wait for another season of the NFL. Next week, we will have award predictions for you, as well as the return of quick picks, as always, as we get ready for week one of the NFL season. So look forward to that. That'll be a ton of fun next week as we get into things. But we appreciate you sticking around, hanging out with us on the Megasode. It's a lot. It's a hefty one, but it's necessary. And it's fun, right, Mitch?
It's a blast. It's a blast every single time.
It is great. Before we wrap up, remind the people about Anchor.
Anchor is the only place that you can become a permanent part of the conversation. Go ahead and get on anchor.fm/thesportshourguys. Be a permanent part of the conversation. Go ahead on there. Leave us a voice message. We'll play your message right here on the podcast. Who do you think is going to win the Super Bowl? Who's your Super Bowl matchup? Who are your favorites? We want to hear from you. Go ahead and leave us a message right there on anchor.fm/thesportshourguys. You can go on anywhere that you listen to your podcast. That's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to it. You can find the Sports Hour. Get on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Tell us that we suck, because, Dallin, that's the only way that we can get better.
That is the only way that we can get better. If you don't already, follow our socials. The Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys. Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys. The TikTok at The Sports Hour Guys. You can also follow the website, thesportshourguys.wordpress.com. Follow me on Twitter at Dallin Graff. And that's pretty much it.
I forgot it was the death of Lil Thoin.
That is right. Lil Thoin has been dead. And unsurprisingly, Mitch, the follower count has gone up pretty quick.
I would imagine so.
It's amazing. Apparently people didn't like the Lil Thoin. I thought it was great, but you know what? It's fine. I guess I could be myself online.
There you go.
Guess that's okay. All right. Guys, again, thanks for sticking around. Thanks for listening. We love doing this. We appreciate you guys listening. We wouldn't do it without you. We don't just talk into a void. We appreciate having you guys listening and being a part of the show. So we do invite you to do that and share your thoughts with us. So until next time, we love you. We appreciate you. And we will catch you next week.
See ya.